to WRAF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Julene, how are you?
I'm doing just fine, Peter. Thank you.
I noticed you didn't ask me how I'm doing.
How are you?
Not good. I need Medicare.
What am I asking?
Medicaid.
That?
Something. I just took some coffee. What is with these colds?
I don't know.
Pardon me. But,
going around the Werby house.
Given it's such a historic night, I figured I was just going to lace myself with cough medicine and Tylenol. And
I'm glad you did it, yeah. Peter, because it is an historic night.
It
and
is.
I wanted to share it with you.
And also our listeners. So comments on what just happened. Summit to success by President Barack Obama. The Democratic-controlled Congress approved historic legislation tonight extending health care to tens of millions of uninsured Americans and cracking down on insurance company abuses, a climactic chapter in the century-long quest for near-universal coverage.
Is it really going to happen? Am I going to get health care finally, Peter?
Well,
is Jade going to get health insurance?
In 2014...
Is that really how long it's going to be?
It's going to take a time for it to. You know, I'm not even. We got some points here that I'm not even sure when all of this clicks in. But like most legislation and most new stuff, it's pretty. Pretty complicated. But it stops insurance companies from denying coverage to people with pre-existing conditions.
That's supposed to happen immediately.
Exactly, immediately. Requires insurance companies to spend money on health care, not CEO salaries and profits. It strengthens Medicare, 65 and older, and it helps small businesses. And it should control costs. And in the long run, according to the Congressional Budget Office, which is nonpartisan, it should actually reduce the budget. So, your thoughts, 313-298-WRIF.
Yeah, don't believe the hype.
Yeah, well, it was totally partisan. Oh, no, I'm sorry, it's not true. There were Democrats that voted in opposition to it.
Yeah, it was mostly partisan.
Yeah, there were no Republicans that voted for it. Let's see, Speaker Nancy Pelosi said that we will be joining those who established Social Security, Medicare, and now tonight health care for all Americans. And Jim Clyburn, representative from South Carolina, said this is the Civil Rights Act of the 21st century. Now, I'm trying to actually, Republicans were unanimously opposed, but, you know, they were unanimously opposed to Social Security.
Yeah.
And they were, someone may look this up. I don't know if they were unanimously, but they were also completely opposed to Medicare as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they said this was a budget buster. It was going to destroy the American medical system. And as we were talking last Sunday,
mm-hmm.
That 50% of all medical care is delivered via government programs anyway.
That's exactly right.
And a third is private insurance, and then the rest of it are the people that are insured.
SOL.
Yeah, insurance. SOL. Absolutely. Yeah, that's, you got the SOL insurance. So, is this a good bill? Is it a bad bill?
Well, it's really, certainly flawed.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I guess my main objection to it is that rather than making it socialized medicine, making it essentially Medicare for everyone, because Medicare works pretty good for older people. It's got a lot of flaws, ones that could be corrected.
Well, especially now that it's being slashed here and there in Michigan.
Oh, well, that's Medicaid.
Medicaid,
really.
Oh.
Yeah. And that's because, that's what's happening, is because state contributions are lessening because of these budget crises. But essentially what a lot of us wanted was, probably the majority of people at some point, I saw this in polls, majority of people wanted single-payer universal health care that would take care of everybody, get rid of the insurance companies completely. Right now, though, what the Obama administration has done, and probably people would say, well, it was realistic, the only thing they could do, was they have privatized, they have increased the privatization of health care. So right now, these rapacious greedheads in the insurance industry, the health insurance industry, just now have 32 million new customers.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I think it's just going to open up for other avenues as well.
Well,
you don't just have those choices.
No, and what we can hope for along the line is people will say, "Well, this this doesn't work like this." Maybe, you know, because one of the things that the conservatives are afraid of, it's the thin wedge. That's what they're always worried about, the thin wedge, which will open this up to, what do they call it? Oh yeah, what every other country in the world has that has a similar economy and
industrialized.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, like that, right? So we would be like Canada,
ooh,
you know, where Sarah Palin and her family went to get medical care when lived up there in Whitehorse or near Whitehorse.
I had a good little argument the other night with the log cabin Republican over that too, about Canada, and he's
a gay Republican.
Oh, yeah. I finally met one.
How come? Well, there's so many. Don't you think there's more gays in the Republicans than there are in the Democrats?
Well, yeah. I told this guy, I said, listen, have you ever watched Outrage about all of the gay Republicans in the closet? And I said, come on.
Well, here's the problem. Let's go. Maybe everybody knows this, but here's a couple of articles. The number of uninsured adults and children in California swelled by 28% between 2007 and 2009. The increase to 8.2 million people is largely because of job loss during the recession. Anthony Wright, the executive director of Health Access, says, under health reform, we could get the help we need so we don't lose coverage when we lose income. That's what happens. This is what our country looks like without reform. California is like the ghost of Christmas future for the rest of the country. In Pennsylvania, facing sharp rises in cost, and this is what you were talking about, Jillian, Pennsylvania has almost doubled the monthly bill for a state health insurance program for poor people who do not qualify for Medicaid and are on a waiting list for a less costly option. They've just raised it to $600 a month.
It is completely outrageous.
Yeah, how could poor people pay $600 a month? That's $7,200 a year. So, again, this is increasingly what we're looking at.
Yeah, that's the point, right?
Yeah, and as you were mentioning also, this is a story from up in Flint. Carol Villette's cancer returned with a fury last summer. Go into it.
Oh,
very
terrible.
She began a punishing regimen of chemotherapy and radiation, and she had monthly appointments with her primary care physician. And then her doctor informed her a few months later that he could no longer see her because the state had lowered its
office visits
to no more than $25 per office visit.
So he was losing money, and he went on for a while. The doctor tried to keep doing it, but finally he was losing so much money that he had to stop taking those Medicaid patients.
So that is the problem. But what about we just do it usually in terms of the worst cases, and there's millions of them, perhaps even tens of millions of the worst cases. We've heard them over. When you say over and over again, it's like you're bored of hearing. We've heard them so many times, and it's because they are reality. Well, what about people like me? What about people like a lot of you that have like an employer financed?
Well, you're just going to keep it.
But without health care reform, it was going to go up and up.
It has been.
So I don't understand what the conservative response to. I don't understand when they said they didn't want Social Security for our seniors, for our elders, what they had in its place. You know what they had in its place? Nothing. Could they conserve the situation as it presently was? Mm-hmm. In the middle of a depression, when old people, boy, this is going to be a tough night, I'll tell you.
Yeah, well, you can let the people speak, Peter.
Never.
Open up those lines. They are open.
They'll have to carry me out of here with no voice, which could happen any minute. So get on the line, folks. 313-298-WRIF. But like my wife said to me, what is this going to mean to us? And I said, I actually really don't know. I mean, since we have health coverage through our company. And I said, we'll see. And the deal is, if there's problems in this bill, they can be fixed. And as it is, what has been passed is just the initial bill, and now the House is going to start with different amendments. But again, the idea that the government can pass a law requiring everyone to buy health insurance from private insurers, I don't even know if that's going to pass constitutional muster. You know?
I know. We talked about that.
Yeah. So what's the other option? The only other option is what every other country in the world has done, or some variant of it.
Single payer.
Yeah, single payer. So So is this going to work? I don't know. Is it going to be a budget buster, as the conservatives say? I don't know. Is it going to reduce, reduce the deficit, as the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office says? I don't know that either. But we can see, and if there are problems, we can begin to fix it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But there is a level, and I don't know why these people get, as we keep saying, get so much press. The teabaggers, who really outdid themselves. I mean,
I'm glad you said it, Peter, because I got a listener didn't enjoy my.
Do you have that
use
email?
I don't have it in front of me. I can pull it up.
Wait a minute. Here it is.
Here. Okay. This is good because you sent this to me. I thought, oh no, here we go. Let's see, the title, Julene is causing a mockery of your show. And I thought, oh, no, really. So he says, Matt says, straight to the point, most of the media seems to be referring to the Tea Partiers as just that, Tea Partiers. However, Julene constantly, and so does Peter, refers to them as teabaggers, which anyone who is under 30 years old immediately recognizes the act of putting one's...
You can say it.
A can?
Cajones.
Cajones into a deceased
person's
mouth. Okay, you got that all wrong.
Yeah.
So you might want to get your dirty terms correct
necrophilia.
Go spouting off,
that's
Matt.
That's under the category of necrophilia. Now you can go, Google teabagging and see
what it is.
It is a sex act, but
yeah,
it's with two live people.
Right, they're both alive, right?
Yeah.
He said, I was listening to your show at work. I'm an engineer. And everyone started bashing it and laughing maniacally over the use of the word. I wasn't pleased. Just a heads up. Google teabagger. Dude, we are way ahead of you.
Yeah. So,
no worries. We're doing it on purpose.
Yeah, they were calling themselves teabaggers.
In the beginning, till they realized, oops.
Yeah. Didn't I write him something?
Oh, you did? Oh, yeah. Yeah, you wrote back and
but it's
said,
not on there.
You specifically asked me to only use teabaggers.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
He told me to do it.
All right, but so there can be people that, I don't know, I mean, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Some of these Republicans, which of course are just seeing this as opposition, as a road to political power. They don't care anything about their constituents. They don't, I mean, they're this solely concerned with personal and political power and contributions and all of that. And they realize that part of their base has just absolutely tumbled into the realm of political hysteria.
Yes.
And it's to the point where when you have these teabagger rallies, they really are fascist mobilizations. They are the crazed right wing that takes something that nobody yet knows what the qualities are or how this is going to play out in reality. And if it does play out badly, it can be fixed. It can be fixed through other legislation. It's not like you're on a, you know, like on the top of a hill with a toboggan and then all, you know, just down the hill. You can do so. You go, whoa, this isn't quite working out like we expected. So let's add this. So why is this level of hysteria so intense? That they get to the point where I think a lot of their true character comes out. And
Where we talk about racism, Peter?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Demonstrators outside the U.S. Capitol. This is the fascist mobilization. Angry over the proposed health care bill, shouted the N-word. They actually have the word here in the story. I can't bring myself to do it. At U.S. Representative John Lewis. He's a Georgia congressman, probably late 60s, and civil rights icon who was nearly beaten to death during an Alabama march in the 1960s. And guess what word he heard before these white races were beating the crap out of him in the 1960s? You got it. Same one. They were shouting, sort of harassing, Lewis said, but it's okay. I faced this before.
Just the other day.
Yeah. It reminded me of the 60s. And these people were yelling, kill the bill, kill the bill. And he said, I'm for the bill. And they responded by saying, kill the bill, then the N-word. And Representative Emanuel Cleaver said he was a few yards behind Lewis and distinctly heard that word.
Yes.
It was a chorus. In a way, I feel sorry for these people who are doing this nasty stuff. They're being whipped up. I decided I wouldn't be angry with them.
Probably the best chorus, you know.
Representative Barney Frank, an openly gay member of Congress, said the crowd called him a faggot. A faggot, you know what a faggot is? It's not just a gay person.
Cigarette.
It also, they used to burn people at the stake, and what they put underneath them to begin the fire were faggots.
Ooh.
Which is kind of where the term,
where their mentality is?
Where the cigarettes, fags. You can give me a fag.
Uh-huh.
You see, you'd see it in 1930s movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You hear it today and you go, what? you have these people that have been driven right over the edge. They're led by crazy people, most of them on television. And also, there was like 100,000 calls an hour coming into the House of Representatives switchboard. And it was supposed to be this spontaneous outpouring of American rage against this health care bill. I mean, which doesn't do anything too much more than bring in tens of millions of other people. A lot of people among the teabaggers, of course, are already getting socialized medicine through Medicare, they tend to be, you look at them, 40s, 50s, so pretty soon they will be getting socialized medicine, mm-hmm. Medicare, so I don't understand why they don't want other people to get the same thing. But there's a psychoanalytic component here, and as I always say, I know it's always convenient to say your opponents are crazy, but these people are crazy. They're crazed.
They define crazy.
And all of this represents much more than any health care bill. It's partly that they see the world that they thought they were part of slipping away. Suddenly there's a colored guy that's president. Suddenly there's...
They cannot deal with it.
I think that's a good part of it, actually. This is all aimed at Obama, essentially. Even though this bill is in many ways a conservative health reformer's dream. It turns it all over to the private sector. Don't they love the private sector? It's funny. They hate government and they love big corporations. Oh, they said, no, we don't like big corporations. And we hate the banks and all that. Well, they seem to, I don't know, they're pretty inconsistent. But hey, your thought, please. Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan here on
only
WRS
one,
Night Call.
You said your thought. I like that.
What?
You didn't say your thoughts. Just
no,
one.
Your thought.
You only get one.
Oh, you know what I forgot to ask you, and I'm going to have to ask you this cryptically.
Oh, no.
You're having a little public appearance on Tuesday. Can we mention that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I don't think we can. No, we can't.
I don't think we have to say who's involved. We can just say you're going to be there.
No.
Okay.
I don't think we can.
All right. Okay.
But if you are crafty, you can find me.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. All right. But
it is kind of funny, though.
But Jalene is out and about. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. 313-298-WRIF. And, boy.
Go to the phones.
Let's go to the phones. Here's Dan and Shelby. Dan, hi. You're on the air. Thanks for being our first caller. Dan, let me see. Did I do any of
no,
them?
I didn't.
Ooh, you know what? You see?
Oh,
never mind. Hold on, Dan. Hold on. I see.
You can answer from the board.
No, I got to do this. I got to. There we go.
Okay.
Although, you know what?
What?
I think since I did this, I think this is going to put Jade on the air.
Really?
When Jade answers the phones. But we'll see. All right.
Okay, Jade, keep it clean in there.
Yeah. Hey, Dan and Shelby, you're on the air now. Go ahead.
Good morning. Welcome. Thank you for being on the radio, and thank you for being part of the solution.
Well, thank you, sir.
Hey, long-time listener. Just work third shift, so I don't catch you guys very often.
Ah. You can listen to the podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's hard to transition between teabag and collecting sticks for fires to health care reform.
Oh, we do it all the time here.
I hear it. my concern is, you know, as you were saying, was, I do have health care. I'm with the Detroit 3. I do have health care, but I pay thousands of dollars every year out of my pocket.
Yeah.
My last physical cost me almost $1,000.
Wow.
With blood work and all of that? Or?
With blood work, I had to go in for a stress test.
Oh. Yeah.
Right? So, and it just adds up and adds up, and that's all out of pocket. You know?
$1,000? Are you kidding me?
I'm up to $900 right now.
Yeah.
That's
much,
crazy.
How much a year do you think you pay, Dan?
I think, that's the first time I've been in 2 years. You know, but all of our office visits are out of pocket. Everything's out of pocket. It I think this past year, our health changed for mental health, $1,000 deductible. Not that we use it yet, but
doesn't make you want to, does it?
No, it doesn't.
In fact, it would make you very depressed to use it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know. So, and that's my curiosity is how is this going to work out?
Well, you know what? I don't know those details. And if you have, I mean, that's part of the problem is, and that's what always there's always some element of unfairness. Last week and the week before, we were talking about people and food stamps. So if you make, say, like $26,500 a year, you don't get, you're not eligible for food stamps. You make $26,000, you are. So a guy that, two guys or a guy and a gal that are in the same wage strata, one has more advantages and gets more, from the government than the other, which doesn't make a bit of sense. I mean, that's why if you just had one universal plan for everybody, like they have in Canada, it'd be fine. And we could leave a private option open. I mean, if people wanted more stuff covered or plastic surgery or stuff like that, they could finance it themselves if they could afford it. But this is insane because you know what might happen, Dan? If you might not have any advantage at all from this bill.
Correct. Yeah?
You're just going to leave you screwed having those high payments.
I mean, if something catastrophic, I'm covered. But day-to-day? You know, day to day is what kills most of us.
Well, I've got to tell you, Dan, I've been looking at some of these reports and people that have what they think are catastrophic the coverage. It comes in and they go, oh, sorry, there's an $8,000 cap on it, which is about enough for a few days' tests, you know.
Yeah, $8,000 cap or $8,000 deductible.
Yeah,
still
exactly.
Still going to
hurt real bad. Well, all right, we got to keep on fighting for all this, and hopefully, I mean, the Liberal Democrats say this is just the opening. This is the best we can do, and we shall see as time moves on.
You know, knowing them, Peter,
yeah.
I believe them. It's the best they can do.
Yeah, well, it's probably true.
Yeah.
Pardon me. Here is, let's see here. Let me just, here is Rob. Rob is in Armada. Sorry, couldn't say it.
Armada.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always say soft A's. Go ahead. Rob, go ahead. You're on the
air. I just wanted to say I love you guys, first of all.
Thank you.
the one thing I was thinking of when you read that email about the teabaggers and the necrophilia.
Yeah.
I'm 22, and most of the younger people, when they hear that term, it's actually a term that you use for video games. When you kill an enemy and you just quickly go over their corpse and crouch, and it's just a sign that, oh, I beat you, and that's it.
Huh, so maybe...
Okay, so there's other kinds of teabagging we don't know about.
All right, so the guy...
Great, it's even sicker.
Yeah, he was correct. But if you go... I mean, teabagging...
He was going off of a video game.
Yeah, teabagging has a long and distinguished history in the sexual pantheon.
It most certainly does.
Yeah, so... Yeah, but okay, so then he was more right than we thought. He wasn't a sicko at all. He was,
he just plays that video game.
Plays games. Thank you, Rob. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Here is Mike. Mike's in Rochester. Mike, hi. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. My name is Mike. I oppose this health care bill mainly for economic reasons. The fact is you're bringing in 35 million more people into a business with zero more income. I just don't understand the economics of this entire bill.
Well, I can't say that I can enlighten you. And
what about those of us who do have an income, which I obviously do? I'm sitting here talking, working, and I've got another job besides this in radio. And I don't have health insurance. So I'm not one of these people bringing in nothing.
I understand that. But
wait. Mike means you're not bringing any more money into the medical system, right?
Exactly. That's my whole point is the fact that I'm a working person right now. I have health care through my employer, and I already pay insurance. And there's the 35 million people. I'm sure there are people who will pay into the insurance, but the majority of the people still will not have any income towards the healthcare industry, and it's just going to be coming out of the pockets of everybody who already has healthcare.
Well, what happens the day you lose your job?
Well, wait a minute. That's the worst case scenario.
But here, it happens all the time.
Here's, I mean, Jillian is right. I mean, we need these safety nets for people. But there's going to be a big tax. Well, you know what? There's going to be a small tax bite on people individuals making $200,000 a year, and families that make over $250,000 a year to pay. It's not going to cause me. I mean, I hate to to ruin the illusions of some of the listeners, but I don't fall into that category where my taxes will be raised. And according to the proponents of the bill, it's not going to raise the taxes of 98% of Americans, and that the bill itself overall after 10 years will actually reduce the deficit. Am I saying that that's the case and that's absolutely true? I, as I said before, and I don't mean to sound dumb, but I don't have any idea. And
that's the thing. Like that's the case that they say. You never know what's going to turn out, and I just don't see that happening. Having throwing 35 more million customers with a lot less income.
Well, one of the things that we're going to do, you and me, Mike, is that there's going to be there has to be supplements to people since we're going to be forcing people to buy health insurance. If you make under $44,000 a year as an individual, or under $88,000 a year as a family, there's going to be tax, what do you call it? I can't remember the word. Supplements, I guess it is. In other words, the government will pay.
Subsidies.
Thank you. Thank you, Jillian. Yeah. But so I'm thinking, wait a minute. Some of my tax money is going to go to these big tax companies to help other people pay their insurance. I'll tell you, I wouldn't mind, and this is not in the bill, and this is not going to happen, I wouldn't mind a slight tax increase if it went, because I feel, I'm pretty lucky and pretty special given the circumstance of a lot of people. If I knew it was going directly to a universal health care system, but I certainly wouldn't like the idea if it's going to wind up in the hands of Aetna or something like that. So I'm not sure how it's all going to play out.
Right.
All right. We will have to see. And I'll tell you what, if it turns out to start biting the average middle class person or the average working class person, there will be such an enormous revolt against it that it could be repealed. But and maybe your caution in it all is well placed. I'm not trying to say that everybody that is opposed to this is this whack job right wing teabagger. There are concerns that that we're not going about this properly. I mean, how are we still fighting these wars, spending $1 trillion a year on fighting wars and doing all the other stuff, and and taking on this new responsibility? So, all right, Mike, thank you very much. I appreciate your call and your concerns as well. Whoa, come on. It's good. I'm fighting Jade here. I've talked about video games. So our phone screener, Jade, who is at 313-298-WRIF, ready to take your call.
Oh, you can't answer a phone call if she's answering it?
Well, we are using the same screen, even though we're in different rooms.
You are.
And we have one cursor between us.
The curse of the cursor.
Jade, I'm grabbing it. I'm grabbing it.
Get it. Go, Peter.
I got it. This is stop that. All right. Here's Kevin. Kevin's calling in Maryland. Kevin, where are you calling from in Maryland?
Outside of Baltimore, Peter.
Okay. Welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you. Hi, Jillian, and hi, Peter. Long time listener.
Really?
And Detroit native.
Oh, right on.
And my question for you is, what do you think about Rush Limbaugh now since this has passed?
Since
what?
Do
you think he's going to back up?
Since what?
Since this bill is going to be passed, what do you think, Rush Limbaugh is going to leave the country or what?
Well, he said he was going to go to Costa Rica to get his medical care.
I hope he does. Bye-bye.
Yeah, one less person.
Well, we can come up with a lot of words.
I don't know.
Menace.
He'll have some, remember, what's his name? What's it? I can't think of his name. The movie star who said he was going to leave the country if Bush got reelected in 2004.
Oh, Bush, was it Sean Penn?
Well, probably a lot of those.
Martin Sheen? I could go through the list. You know?
No, he's got a brother. He's got a right-wing brother.
Right-wing brother. Oh.
Anyway, but this guy said, he does co-hosting on Turner Classic Movies on Saturday nights. I can just see him. He was in It's Complicated.
Oh, Al Alec Baldwin.
Alec Baldwin.
Oh, of course.
Alec Baldwin said
he's got a lot of brothers.
Does he?
Yeah.
Well, he said he was...
Oh, he's got the Jesus-loving brother.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay.
Alec Baldwin said if Bush got reelected, he was leaving the country. So people said, well, how come you didn't leave the country? He said, Bush lost. He stole the election. So I don't know what Rush Limbaugh is going to say.
Something really insane, off the wall, and something that will put the fear in all of those listening to him.
Let me ask you this, Kevin.
Yes.
Why do you think you, me, all of us, give these people so much incredible attention? They represent maybe a third of the country. And, for instance, Jolene and I, we've been at demonstrations in Washington that have had hundreds of thousands
I've
of people at them.
One with a million.
And it barely rippled the waves of the mainstream media. No one in this, that we were in Washington, no one even knew that it occurred here in Detroit.
And they get 1,500 people together, and it makes the news over.
That was in Nashville for their Crazo rally with Palin. They had 300 people out there shouting the N-word at congressmen and all that. 300 people. And you know how many, at the same time, well, here, I can prove it, because I'll bet you, maybe one of you, or maybe you're pretty close, Kevin, that when you're pretty close to D.C., did either of you know that there was an immigration rallies there on Saturday with thousands and thousands of people?
I knew there was an anti-war rally.
Also, yeah, I forgot. And there was also anti-war rallies around the country with tens of thousands of people.
No.
And everybody,
really?
Of course, knew about those, right?
Didn't know about the immigration rally.
But three.
Well, to answer your question, Peter and Jolene, it's one word, fear. Fear equals ratings.
That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like a lockdown on ratings, sure.
I'll tell you, Rush Limbaugh and the man with the blackboard who also does a daily radio show, there's no market that they get particularly high ratings in. But owners, since they're corporate owners, and some of them are connected with extremely large radio chains like Clear Channel, they put people like Rush Limbaugh on, and they get moderate and lower ratings, because there's a third kind of who really attracted those shows, angry white guys. That's the core of conservative listenership. And there's enough in every area that it totals up into the millions. And you could very easily, if you put me on all those stations, or Tom Hartman, or Mike Malloy, or anybody like that, we would register the same. And they would have all these conservatives saying, "How do you think about Peter Warby? What do you think he's going to do now? Is he going to go to Canada?" But we're just kept off in the margins.
Conservative voice is so annoying.
And if they, if they put me on a show in Baltimore and I wound up like with a 2.6 rating, they'd probably say, this guy isn't doing real well. Kick his butt off and get somebody else on. But Rush can get those kind of ratings, 2.6s, 2.8s, 3s, 3.1s maybe.
And remain
this, multimillionaire friend of the corporation, and who plays off the anger of these guys who and keeps them from ever really settling on some real solutions to the problems they see and feel.
Just kind of the fringe of fear, we'll call it.
Yeah. All right, Kevin, thanks for joining us from so far away.
Thanks, Kevin.
Hey, thank you.
All right, bye now. Of course, Baltimore has a special special place in my heart.
It does.
Yeah. I never really said why, did I? I never did. But my father lived there. My father passed away last year, but I didn't want to bring that to the show. And it was a long time ago. So now, over a year.
I love Baltimore. It's a great place.
So that's when I kept not being here, like the first part of last year. That's why I was going there.
Yeah.
But Dad lived a long and wonderful life.
And what would Dad say about the health care?
My dad, who died when he was 94.
You didn't have a Republican father like me.
Oh, no. God, no. My father at 92 or 93 was giving lectures on Keynesian economics, the whole idea that the government should be involved in spending. And he and his wife, because my mother passed away before him, were going around to old folks' homes and telling them to go out and vote for Obama.
But Dad was a great person.
You know what, though? He would have been very disappointed in Obama just as we are.
Well, in a lot of it, for sure.
In a lot of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and but he would have supported this health care.
But you know what else your dad did at 92?
What?
Played doubles tennis.
No, not that late.
90. He was at 90.
Yeah, 90.
I mean, come on. Yeah. 90, 92, whatever.
Yeah. All right, come on. I'm going to start reminiscing, but let me get back to... Oh, yeah. That which reminds me about Obama's popularity. You see these right-wing sites, and they keep talking about how his popularity is down so much.
Oh, I had this conversation with the log cabin Republican the other night.
The gay Republican.
Yes. How can anybody
be a gay Republican?
I said that to him.
Because there's so many gays in the Republican Party, I suppose. So they're all in the closet.
He wants to bring them out.
Yeah, except for the ones that are exposed and outed. But, So if you see, like, Obama's popularity has gone from, like, say, 62% down to 49%, it's not what's happened there is that people that backed him, his base, his supporters, people that got out there and worked for him, the unions and the union people and the how many new voters did they have? Like 8 million new voters or something like that. Those are the people that are disappointed in Barack Obama, and that's why they don't give, that's why he doesn't get good marks. Hey, you think we, speaking of capitalism?
go for
all
it.
All right.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julie Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julian are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that now it's more important than ever to buy an American-made vehicle. We at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing and want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new Lincoln MKS, the sleek Lincoln MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the Lincoln MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. We encourage you to check out our virtual showroom on our website, Demmer.com. You can check out our vehicle inventory, and you can bet that if we don't have the vehicle you're in the market for, we'll do our very best to get it for you. While you're online, we invite you to get a no-obligation internet price quote. Whether you come into our newly renovated dealership or visit us online, we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury invite you to experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood in Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com.
Sure, we're broke college students,
but we don't have to eat like we're broke.
Right now, we can get any pizza from Pizza Hut for just $10.
Any pizza, any size, any crust, any toppings.
So we can get a Supreme, a Meat Lovers, any pizza for just $10. Feels good to save money.
Even if it's our parents' money.
Don't miss out. Right now, any pizza at Pizza Hut is just $10. Any pizza, any size, any crust, and any toppings for only $10. Only at your Pizza Hut.
Additional charge for stuffed crust pizza. Limited time offer. No double toppings. Crust availability, prices, participation, delivery areas, and charges may vary.
Are you struggling with too much credit card debt, sky-high interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees? Having trouble just making the monthly minimums? We can help. We're Credit Card Relief. We've helped thousands of people become debt-free in months instead of years, all while saving thousands of dollars and without risking your family home. No, this isn't bankruptcy. It isn't one of those credit counseling deals or a high-interest consolidation loan. We're Credit Card Relief. We've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're an attorney-driven program with an outstanding record of performance and client satisfaction. If you're serious about getting out of debt, call Credit Card Relief right now. Don't wait for the collection calls to start. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Riff.
This is your Car Care Minute. With more folks taking driving vacations this year, the pros at the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence offer the following tips to help you arrive at your destination safely. First, review your owner's manual and follow the recommended service schedules. Be certain to check the level and concentration of the cooling system. Check your tires for wear and pressure, and be sure your heating and air conditioning systems are operating efficiently. If you've been experiencing performance problems such as hard starts, rough idling, or stalling, now's the time to have your vehicle serviced by a certified automotive technician. It's extra insurance against an annoying breakdown while on vacation. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much. We're obviously talking about health care. The Democrats have passed their bill, and
we have an email I wanted to read to you, Peter.
Okay. Let me see. Let me just tell people, though, 219 to 212 vote, Republicans unanimous in opposition, a few Democrats, people that were in districts that they were fearful that that would be used against them in the election. Mm-hmm. And they brought aboard the so-called anti-abortion Democrats, who they ought to kick their ass out of the Democratic Party. In fact, they ought to say, here's the Democratic Party platform, which includes a woman's right to choose and a number of other things.
You're not on board? Go over there.
Well, you know what? They could say, we are not going to finance your reelection through the, and cleanse the party of conservatives. Get rid of their ass. Okay, what do you say? We had some email.
Okay, Travis wrote in. He's very angry. Better, you can do better. Get the facts in front of you. Wow, stop being another worthless, opinionated media retard. Look at the bill. Be informed and have the facts at hand. Well, we do. If you did that, any 12th grade educated person, which wasn't...
Did you just misspeak yourself?
No, that's what he wrote.
Oh, 12th grade.
Would see the damage and additional costs that this bill will attribute to our national debt. Wait, I think... Okay, all right. I just don't even know what to do with these emails sometimes, Peter. Not to mention, stop the name-calling mockery.
Well...
What name? Oh, and then he said to get our S together. And stop talking about hearsay and things we have no clue on. This is not hearsay. We're not talking about hearsay. I don't know.
Anyway.
Don't belittle people. Make the world a better place. Well, that's what we're here trying to do, actually.
Yeah. I mean, one thing.
So stop belittling us.
Name calling. It's those...
teabagging.
Idiotic teabaggers that are name calling all the time.
Okay.
Hey, Travis, I've got all these documents in front of me. Key implementation benchmarks of Senate bill. Healthcare 101, a consumer primer on Obama's bill. Healthcare for America Now, talking points on Democratic health reform legislation. It's all here in front of me, okay? Why do I say I'm not sure what's going to happen? Because anything is possible to put down on paper, including what you just read.
Do you, Travis, know really what's going to happen?
Come on,
no,
man.
You don't, dude.
Yeah, you don't.
And also, someone else wrote in. I just got this one. First of all, I know Rush Limbaugh, and you're no Rush Limbaugh. Thank God. Thank you. Thank you for the compliment of the night. You made my whole day, and Peter's, I'm sure. If you mad a fraction... of his money. Oh, if you made a fraction of his money, you wouldn't be a far left freak. Secondly, way to go, Obama. Today's the best day ever for the Republican Party. He is screaming at me now in caps. Can't wait till we clean house in November. Once again, there will be incentive to work hard. Oh, what are you saying? Are we going back on those poor people again, Peter?
No. That's
those
right.
Damn lazy poor people.
If you don't have health insurance, you don't deserve it.
You don't deserve it. Yeah, you're lazy.
Yeah, you're
you know what you're doing. You're using your bridge card for ho-hos. And then finally, he says, nuke the whales. What an idiot.
Yeah.
There I go, name calling again.
Joe from Farmington Hills writes into Call Talk, yes, at yahoo.com. What is going to stop the Republicans from trying to repeal this health care bill after they reclaim power after the 2010 and or 2012 elections? Well, I don't know. If they get a majority, they're not going to be able to get it through Barack Obama. I mean, he's not going to sign it. So if they elect Sarah Palin, or who are they talking about now? Liz Cheney?
Oh, please. Cheney.
Yeah, that's the new one.
Wait, there's a log cabin Republican.
No, that's Mary Cheney.
Oh, it's Mary?
Yeah.
Okay, I get those Cheney
babes. That's her election slogan. I'm not the lesbian. I owe that to Bill Maher, by the way.
So
I don't know. I mean, it's here's the deal, Joe, and the rest of us. We're just sitting on our duffs hoping that these these politicians will do right by us. Why don't we, the people, find out what we want and get into motion, get into action, start creating the kind of movement that they had in the 1930s that brought about Social Security and unions and so many other reforms that that the conservatives fought like hell against.
Yeah, which is so easily forgotten and not thought about.
Yeah. So, this is the mentality of screw everybody else. And that is one social philosophy. It's called social Darwinism, and it really it stems from the 19th century, and it's the survival of the fittest, and the hindmost be damned, and I've got mine, and screw everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't. It really doesn't define the whole human species, kind of the what you'd call the psychobiology of the human species, which was always communal. That's how we survived. And to some extent in the modern world, we can survive as these lone individuals, the John Wayne.
Going rogue.
Yeah, going rogue all by yourself. And I don't know. I guess I don't want those kind of people in my commune.
I don't either. They're
they
not
don't want to be in mine, and then I don't want to be in a commune. They want, what did he say? If I made Rush Limbaugh's money, I probably wouldn't be, what did he say, a liberal?
Yeah, you wouldn't be a far-wing left freak.
Yeah, well, yeah. Oh, I always take that as a compliment.
Yeah.
You mean it as well?
Listen, here's the deal. At this show, in this room, we let our freak flag fly.
But I couldn't even say
every
that.
Sunday, and then throughout the week.
Yeah, but hey, what are you telling me? That if you make millions, you just become these greedy, awful people? I agree. In the main, there is a lot of people.
Some people, not at all.
There's not. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
I know some pretty darn cool millionaires. Just
you do?
A few. Yeah.
Do. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You know them too.
I do. Yeah. Okay. Here's Kevin in Detroit. Kevin, you're on the air. Welcome.
How you doing, Pete and Jolene?
Hi.
Pete, I'm at. Your father, I think, did the good thing. I'm like your father. I'm disappointed too, Pete. I'm disappointed in him too, some ways. Because he should have pushed for the public option. He really should have.
He should have. He should have just gone for socialized medicine, and then if people wanted to compromise, okay.
They probably
call
that anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, then you look at some of the things they said to John Lewis. Now, let me ask you and Jolene this: don't you think? Is it really that much anger over health care, or is it a little bit deeper than that?
Oh, it's much deeper. Who could be that angry over a bill that might be a mistake?
It's about the lazy poor people, and Peter and I already talked about it. It's about that little word called racism. Racism.
I'm a black guy. I try to not look at everything.
We're white, and we're looking at it that way.
You know, what I'm saying is that, like, I've been listening to Pete for over 26 years, and I value his opinion. I don't know what I would do without you and Keith Olbermann, you on the radio and Keith Olbermann on television.
Yeah, well.
Because everything else is dominated by Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck,
make things up and just fearmonger.
You know, Kevin, the reason that I'm not on television, I don't have a nice enough collection of ties. For some reason or other, I'm always looking at Keith Olbermann's ties.
Peter, I'll go down to the Salvation Army and get you a nice whole collection of them.
I said everything at this rally. They said things about Barney Frank. What gets me, they'll sit there and say, oh, it has nothing. And then who were like, quite silly and all this sometimes is Michael Steele. Michael Steele tried to justify anything sometimes. I'm serious.
Yeah.
And I think the only reason he was picked, and I really believe this, he was a counterbalance to Barack Obama. Do you agree?
Yes, I do.
I guess they wanted to have one black guy in the Republican Party, right?
Yeah, right. Do you see how Pat Buchanan's going crazy over Rubio down in Florida?
No.
Mm-mm.
Oh, yes. He's the greatest thing that ever came around in the last 30 years almost.
Yeah, this is, by the way, I should tell people that what Kevin's talking about is a primary, a Republican primary in Florida where Governor Crist, who's this right-wing Republican, is being challenged by this guy named Rubio, who's even farther to the right. I mean,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
He bashing the hell out of Hispanics, seriously.
Well, you know, it's hard to say. In some ways, I would like to think that these guys could, you know, like win and then get, you know, self-destruct. But there's an ugly history in this country of in times of crisis where, you know, these sort of fascist types come to the fore and people, because they're not, they're afraid to go beyond what we have now. They just go for these symbols of, I don't even know what, of what they thought they previously had, and they never even had that. You know, and they think, oh, you know, it's all going down the drain. Well, thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it. What did we used to say, Jolene? We've, in the interest of humanity, we've resigned from the human, or not from
no,
the
we've resigned from the white race.
White race, yeah. We'll stay in the human race. But what
we're just a shade of gray.
What the caller was talking about, in case you missed this, these teabaggers were at the U.S. Capitol, and they were at a fever pitch of hysteria and started shouting the N-word at the U.S. Representative John Lewis, who was a Georgia congressman. And, I mean, he was right there with Martin Luther King and calling,
yes.
It'd be like, and calling Lewis the N-word. It'd be like calling Martin Luther King the N. Oh, yeah, I guess they did, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, they did.
Something's
so this
don't
is the
change.
Same mentality, and the same sort of fascistic mentality that can't deal with that. What was that guy saying at the time? The times, they are a changer.
Mm-hmm.
And what,
Bob Dylan?
Yeah, I guess that was him. And they and they said, what, if you can't get out of the way, if you can't give a hand, because the times, they are a changer.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
you know, that's an intense song. I was asked to sing that at an event a few
really?
Months ago. I turned them down. I mean, there were so many words. I said, oh, no. And it's all,
oh, yeah,
very many different time changes, not to get too musical, but it is a rock station, so there we go.
Okay, let's rock and roll on. Peter Werby, Jolene Jordan, Peter with a bit of a frog in his throat. let's see, here is Mitch in Westland. Mitch, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing good.
First of all, I love your show. I tune in every time that I have the chance to.
Well, thank you.
You know, I believe today is a sad day in America. We're pushing towards socialized medicine. It's passed, and I'm totally against it.
Why? Well, what's wrong with socialized medicine?
Well, here's my problem with it. If socialized medicine is so awesome, why do we have people from Canada coming to the United States because they can't get any health care?
Wow.
You know what, Mitch? That's kind of one of these myths.
Yeah.
I mean,
I just had this argument the other night.
If you need quick elective surgery, the best place to go is the United States. The United States has the best health care, but one of the worst health care systems of all the industrialized countries. Most Canadians are happy enough with their health care, and vast majority of Americans are not very happy with it. I mean, do you have health care?
Yes, I do. I'm only 20 years old, so I'm covered under my parents.
Oh, well, this way, with the bill, you can be covered until you're 26.
Instead of getting kicked out.
Yeah.
I'm a full-time student, and that qualifies me. But
so this is
they work hard for this. I was just watching the news the other day, and there was a woman on there talking about how she's not going to go out and get a job because welfare is paying her more than what she would make to go out and work.
Where was this?
Now,
where was this?
This was on Fox 2.
What was the context, and why would anybody in the world admit to that? It sounds a little shaky, Mitch.
No, but this is that's exactly my problem. People are going to use this and abuse this.
Wait a minute. Why don't they use it and abuse it in France or in England or in Canada
or in Italy or in Sweden or Denmark or every other
industrialized country in the world has socialized medicine?
Why shouldn't we?
Where's the money going to come from?
Well, they're going to raise the taxes on people that got a tax cut from Bush, which wound up screwing us in the first place. I mean, Bush gave us these major double whammies of taking regulations off of banks. I mean, Clinton did that, too, of cutting taxes on the rich and starting these two wars. The money is there. We live in the wealthiest country in the world. How come Italy can afford it? You know? I mean, why can't the United States afford everything? Why are we in such terrible economic shape? That's what you ought to be asking.
Where did it begin?
All right, Mitch, thank you. Hey, I was just I just saw this. This is, has to do with health. Jennifer Granholm, our governor, said she refused to rescind her proclamation urging Michiganders to forego meat eating on Saturday.
I did it. And, boy, this really, really inflamed a lot of people.
Not a lot of people.
Well, there, okay.
What, that, that gay certain, Republican?
Well, no, there's a certain person who works here.
Yeah.
And he or she, I mean, posted something on their Facebook page, and yeah. everyone came in and said, I'm going to eat bacon for breakfast and, you know, a whole chicken for lunch and a big half side of a cow for dinner. And I said, I hear your colon screaming.
Yeah, well, Gary Vogt, Vogt?
V-O-G-T?
Yeah.
Vogt.
Vogt. All right. A beef producer from Marne, Michigan, past president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. He said, here's his meaty menu for Saturday. Bacon, eggs and potatoes, fried in bacon grease, blueberries, yogurt, and apple juice. Lunch, steak stew or chili. Dinner, 18-ounce bone-in ribeye steak. Now, how does this fit in with our conversation about health care? This guy is going to need health care big time.
Yeah, he's going to need a little scraping of the arteries.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Do you want a wireless laptop, but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop, no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patent a device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187. Do you owe back taxes to the IRS that you can't afford to pay? Or are you stuck in a tax payment plan that's getting you nowhere? The IRS is now taking very aggressive actions, such as bank levies and wage garnishments. If you owe the IRS at least $15,000, call American Tax Relief. They've helped thousands of people like you eliminate up to 85% of their delinquent taxes. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, American Tax Relief can settle your tax debt for less than you owe, remove penalties and interest, and protect you from bank levies and garnishments. As a hardworking American, you do have rights. Call American Tax Relief for a free consultation and see how much money they can save you. Call 1-800-493-8159. If you qualify, you can save up to 85% on the taxes you owe. Call right now. 1-800-493-8159. That's 1-800-493-8159.
101 The Riff.
Jeez, Kim, it's hot as in here. What's going on?
Oh, it's only 91 degrees.
Where? In the refrigerator?
Ouch! The countertop is so hot you can fry eggs on it. And bacon and home fries. Are you on that sweat diet?
No.
I'm melting my life away.
Hey, by not running my air conditioner, I'm saving energy and helping the environment.
Uh-huh. There's an easier way to help the environment. Go green. Go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment, and you don't have to sweat it, if you know what I mean. So you got any eggs?
No.
How about shrimp? We can fry shrimp. Do you have any shrimp?
No. I have anchovies.
Mm-mm, no.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
This is your Biotech Minute. Biotechnology, a big word for an area of cutting-edge science that is improving the world we live in. In health, biotech provides breakthrough therapies and treatments for devastating diseases like cancer, MS, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and HIV/AIDS. Biotechnology is also helping farmers produce more crops from existing acreage, reducing fuel use and greenhouse gas emissions, and it's creating fuels from renewable green energy sources like algae and plant waste. And this is just the beginning. The biotechnology research being done in laboratories today will improve the health and quality of our lives and our world for generations that follow. Biotechnology, helping heal, fuel, and feed the world. A public service message from this station and the Biotechnology Industry Organization.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back to our second hour. We are here waiting for your calls. We're talking about the health care bill that is on its way to being passed. Still not clear what effect it'll have in the long run. We'll have to see. The Republicans have given their objections to it. The Democrats say that it's going to have a lot of aspects to it that mm-hmm. are going to benefit people. On the face of it, it looks like it. CJ in Auburn Hills writes into Call Talk, yes, at yahoo.com, says, I hate this bill. It is so weak. It is such a giveaway to the insurance industry and debt increaser by the voucher system and zero cost controls. They can't deny they can just price you out. Oh, they can't deny you coverage. I fear that this bill is so bad it will kill future reform for decades. It's not rocket science. Just take the best system, which is France, and copy it. Single payer now. The only good thing I can say, it likely will save some people's lives and maybe the first step to single payer if it works out. Although, I've got my worries about it, too, and I share those same sentiments.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have another email there?
Yeah. In fact, Richard wrote in, I thought this was kind of interesting. You guys should do a live blog during the show. Cater to your base more effectively. Opinions could be much more expressed among the Night Call community. Something to think about.
Okay, set it up, Joy.
Yeah, I'll get on it.
Yeah. Here, by the way, we were talking last week about the Pledge of Allegiance in a federal appeals court in San Francisco upheld the use of the words under God in the Pledge of Allegiance. The phrase under God put there in 1954, the pledge written by a Christian socialist in the 1890s.
Originally.
Yeah.
And then this Catholic guy got a hold of it.
Yeah, from the Knights of Columbus
right.
and said, we got it. So we don't appear, the people will know we are not godless communists. Conservatives keep saying this is a Christian nation. It was founded on Christian principles. I was reading this book by Michael Parenti called God and His Demons. Pardon me. And in it, he talks about how the First Amendment, as I've said so many times, has the first concern the founders had was that religion would be intertwined with the political state because they saw how terrible that worked out in Europe where they came from. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. I mean, that was because one of the things that the established churches did is that they forbid all the others. But one of the key things as well in the Constitution, which is Article 6, reads, no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. You'd think if this was founded as a Christian nation, they would have that in there. But on the other hand, they went the opposite way. Mm-hmm. No religious psychologist test shall ever be required as a qualification. Because, for instance, in Jefferson, Thomas Jefferson, I'm sorry, in Virginia, Thomas Jefferson passed the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, which said freedom for the Jew and Gentile, the Christian and the Mohammedan, the Hindu and the infidel of every denomination.
Wow.
So he put in there, of course, that this was... for non-believers as well. The founders at their convention declined to have opening services or, benediction. But most importantly, you know how treaties ratified by the Senate become the law of the land. In 1797, the Treaty of Tripoli, negotiated by President Washington and ratified by the U.S. Senate, later signed into law by President John Adams, offered an assurance that the United States would not pursue a vengeful holy war in North Africa. Article 11 of the treaty read, quote, "The government of the United States is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion." Here, says Parenti, was an unequivocal statement of the founder's secular identity and a treatment that stands as the law of the land. Again, the government of the United States is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion.
Too bad it helps so much when you're running for office to go to church.
Yep. Let's see here. Here's Michelle in Farmington Hills. Hi, Michelle. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Julene.
Hi.
Hi. I'd like to say, Julene, you did an excellent job of filling in for Peter.
Thank you.
Yes. And I love you too, Peter.
Well, it's okay. Thank you.
Michelle from back in 91.
All right.
All right. Yeah. Same time, same station.
Yeah.
Right.
And Julene, there was an excellent question, just to wrap up my compliments, when you asked Peter what his father would think of this new health care bill.
Oh, yeah. Peter always very much valued his father's opinion.
I did indeed.
Yes, but that was an excellent question. I mean, if anybody with any intelligence was listening, like your boss or something.
Our boss loves us.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, a question like that was great.
Oh, thank you.
Well, tell me about healthcare.
My interviewing skills are still here.
Yeah.
Great. Healthcare, well, I can't believe how fast it went through.
Wow.
Well, actually, it's been a year and a half or two.
Yeah, or if you really start counting from when they said today there's 100 years, but at least back in the 30s they thought about it, and 1930, so it's been close to 100 years.
Oh.
But look at all we've been through with this, Michelle. I mean, think about everything that's gone on with the teabaggers and scaring people. This has been going on for a little while, but it was, today was a good day.
Right.
Overall and with caution.
Right, but there's so many pages and pages and pages, and Obama's his whole rhythm. And, tomorrow he'll be right on to immigration, because that was the pressure from the immigration thing.
Sure.
Right. And, he's going to be on to something. But also I just wanted to mention about religion in school.
Yeah.
Just to keep things moving. Okay, the Ten Commandments. Even though that is Christian and Catholic, but couldn't there be possibly some form of that in a very non-religious way put up in every school?
Why would you want them?
Because kids need a guideline, and they need a quick little, put it down in my notebook, put it down in my thing, just real quick. Ten Commandments, don't steal, don't cry,
Well, if they had that, that'd be okay, but then they got all these other things.
Don't covet thy neighbor's wife.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Hey, have you,
Julene, okay, who's a good girl, who's a bad girl? I'll spice
you know what? Hey, do you have, Michelle, Michelle, you use a computer?
No.
What? No?
I just told my mom the other day, I'm in California, I said, my God, I'd be like an eccentric person at 45 not using the computer.
Well, that's okay, but I was going to say...
Stay as sweet as you are.
George Carlin's Ten Commandments. I wonder if we have the unexpurgated, or no, the expurgated version
right.
of it.
That would be the right one.
Yeah. If you just put up there on the board, don't kill, don't, I don't know. He gets it down to three. And actually, you know what you could really have, Michelle, and every culture in the world has this, is the golden rule. I mean, we have the golden rule here, he who has the gold rules, but the real golden rule, which is, do unto others as you have them do unto you. That's really all you need. All right, thank you very much. I got to move on. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Maurice in Detroit. Maurice, what's up?
Hello, Peter. Hello, Jolene.
Hi.
Hello, Maurice.
Keep it clean.
I think one of the reasons why they really don't want to have a national care, it'll cost people too much, it'll cost companies too much money. The longer people live, the more benefits the government or the country have to pay out as far as pensions and Social Security.
Now, there's discounts for small businesses.
No, but he's saying that if you had good health care for everybody, everybody would live longer. And you'd have more payouts for Medicare and Social Security.
Oh.
So I want nobody to live longer. It's going to cost the government and companies more money if people live longer.
Wow.
I hadn't thought about that one yet. Maurice is thinking deep and down the line there,
he
Peter.
Did it, Maurice. Thank you.
But he kept it clean, so that's okay.
He did. Here is Rick in South Lyon. Rick, hi. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
Well, first off, I'd like to say that I'm only 17, so I haven't really had the patience to follow too in-depth about the health care issue.
It's pretty hard. It's pretty confusing.
Yeah, I really haven't had the time. But I consider myself conservative, so I really do not agree with having, like, forced upon health care. But I have another, like, solution to this problem.
But wait a minute, Rick. Why is that conservative? I'm not a conservative, and I think conservative is what has led us to this problem. You want to conserve things exactly as they are? That's what a conservative does.
Yeah.
They want everything just as it is. The conservatives wanted to conserve slavery. They wanted to conserve the male-only vote.
Also, Peter, the trend right now is, you know, that people's, what do you call them? I haven't had health insurance in so long I can't even remember how much you pay for it. It's increasing out of pocket.
All your premiums are going up.
Premiums, thank you.
But, yeah, I've got a problem myself with the government saying that everybody has to buy insurance from private company. Boy, I mean, I was wondering whether my voice was going to make. But, Rick, you said you had a solution. That's good. What is it?
Yeah, my solution is to have the government run a program, health insurance company.
Yeah,
that will increase competition among the other private companies, which will then lower the prices.
That's an excellent idea.
That's
I think it's called single payer. I think that's called a public option. Well,
yeah.
No, that would be that's not single payer. That's public option. Yeah, that would hold the feet of these insurance companies to the fire, and people in the government would figure out what's here's our little deal, what makes sense in terms of premiums, and then all of a sudden these healthcare companies that are raising prices like by a third would say, whoa, I guess we can't do this because we've got competition. Good thinking. One of the things I would suggest humbly is don't get caught up in labels, Rick, because, you know, on one hand, like I said, I don't think it's conservative to not want the government to force you to buy health insurance. And on the other hand, you gave a solution, which is the hallmark of, the liberal sector of Congress.
Yes.
Okay, so thank you very much, and thank you for your thoughts.
Which the conservatives don't at all agree with.
Right, at all, right. Hey, I just wanted to shoot this in.
Mm-hmm.
The Vatican has denied that its celibacy requirement for priests was the root cause of the clerical sex abuse scandal convulsing the church in Europe, and again defended the Pope's handling of the crisis. But there, you know, it's sort of...
No surprise.
Well, the idea is that because these guys are forbidden to marry, is mm-hmm. they start diddling... Little boys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Although there's a history too of them taking advantage of young girls as well. But I was reading, where was this? That actually, when you start going through the people accused of clergy accused of sex crime, the Protestants are right in there as well.
I mean,
and they can marry. So that's. But now it turns out that. Files logging Boy Scout abuse are a focus in a civil trial.
Yeah, they've been keeping these files a little bit quiet.
For decades. Hundreds of claims of child sexual abuse by troop leaders of the Boy Scouts of America. They're at the center of a civil court case, which we won't go into because it's too complicated. On Wednesday, lawyers of the plaintiff said in court that they would make a broader case bolstered by the recent release of about 1,000 individual files kept by the Boy Scouts of America from 1965 to 1984. So, I mean, that's like complaints. You always have to wonder if
20 years of complaints.
That there's that much smoke. The only thing I, well, you know, you have to believe in God to be a Boy Scout. You can't
you
be
do?
Gay. You can't be
can,
gay.
Can you fake it?
I was called up in front of my troop.
Oh, wait. This has been a long time since I've heard this one.
I never forgive these guys. I was called up in front of my whole troop with these adults in their Boy Scout uniforms. And I had all these badges and I did all this stuff.
It's a little strange, isn't it? Do they still wear those?
Yeah, I think so. And they said, you don't believe in God? Because somebody ratted me out.
Oh, they
because I was always a militant atheist, even when I was like, 10, 11 years old.
You know, that's the greatest,
people
Peter.
Say something about God. I'd say, there's no God. And I knew that because my parents told me that. You know, that's how you find out about these things one way or the other, right? So the scoutmaster says to me, you don't believe in God? And I go, oh, man, this is going to be trouble. You know, I go, no. And he said, where do you think the world came from? You ask a 10-year-old, where do you think the world came from?
Oh.
Where do you think the blah blah came from? Where do you think the universe came from? You know, and he just like pillared me.
My gosh.
In front of the whole truth.
This is traumatizing.
So, you know, I said, ass out, man. He said, I left those mothers and just started.
You turned that mother out?
Yeah, and just started hanging around the playground smoking cigarettes.
Lucky strikes?
Lucky strikes, no less, yeah. So I'll never forgive
Peter,
it.
I'm sorry. No wonder you're even more scarred than before.
Yeah. Do I have any? Do I bear any resentment?
No.
No. I let it go a long time ago.
But remember my joke? I was in the Girl Scouts.
Yeah.
But I got kicked out.
Why?
Because I ate all the brownies.
Oh, my God. We used to say, you know, the Scout pledge was, on my honor, I will do my best to help the Girl Scouts get undressed.
Are we here? Are we live?
Oh, God. Now I got this damn cold.
Oh, Peter, you're doing great.
Here's Scott in Westland. Hey, Scott, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Pete. Hi, Jalene.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, I just want to talk about Jennifer Granholm's meet out.
Yeah, yesterday.
Well, I have to admit that this is an example of something where, you know, we agree about almost everything, but I guess this is something that, okay, I've got a sister who's been a vegetarian since like 1970, and my mother is a registered dietitian. She's retired now. So really, I know a lot about this subject. And I have to admit, I think this was a political error, actually, on her part. If I was one of her spin doctors, I would have said, no, don't do this.
I kind of agree with him.
I agree.
But
you know what? How about somebody with principles? She also declared Saturday, besides being a meat out day, she also declared it agricultural day, which included meat and cheese. So she was covering all her bases. These meat eaters.
Well, okay. Well, the thing is that, like, I accept people being vegetarians because there's a lot of things about, you know, but you could say that's about almost anything, like including making cars or something like that. That if you really, you know, look your gift horse in the mouth, you know, on his way to the glue factory, you might get a little grossed out.
Gross.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you what I said. Screw these meat eaters. Screw these militant meat eaters. I mean, some of my best friends eat meat. In fact, everybody I know eats meat almost. Right?
Yeah. And I didn't eat meat for something like 27 years. I eat it once in a while now. Once in a while.
We're taking away your beads and buying.
My PETA card has been pulled, believe me.
Right.
Well, I guess that, you know, the technical issue, and we've been through this before on this show over the last 20 years or so or more, is that basically the only vegetarian diet that is potentially, you know, bad for your health is the vegan diet, and that's because, and this is according to the American Dietetic Association, excludes animal products to the extent that you are in danger of getting a vitamin B12 deficiency, which is something that basically you can only get, you know, through, you know, animal sources.
Well, you know what? I mean, I eat fish and I eat dairy products, so I don't have any problem with that. But vegans say differently, and if there's a problem, there are supplements you can take. Vegan is little too much for me. On the other hand, I sort of looked at that salmon today, and I thought, you once had a family. All right. Thank you. I don't want to scare you, Jalene, but I'm going to play a little something. I know this always startles you.
Thank you.
We haven't had a haven't eaten the rich segment in a long time, although they're always well deserving. Yeah. Andrew Lloyd Webber's disputed Picasso painting set for auction. There was a claim on this painting that Webber owned that that they said was sold under duress by the Nazis to the Nazis in the mid 30s. But now Christie's has announced that it would auction the work, Portrait of Angel Fernandez de Soto, the Absinthe Drinker, in London on June 23rd. Now get this: the Andrew Lloyd Webber Foundation bought it at Sotheby's in 1995 for $21.9 million. Christie's was to have sold the painting in New York in November 2006, but there was this lawsuit, da da da. 3 years ago, Christie's expected to bring $40 million to $60 million. Now the auction house believes it can fetch around $60.9 million for...
Because it has Nazi ties?
No, just because it's absolutely insane. How can paint on
it? It was during his blue period.
I know, but this is insane that a painting could go for that much. And who's going to afford this? And then where do they show it? And I mean, will some
Maybe they should donate it to the DIA.
That's our Detroit Institute of Arts.
Yes.
Yeah, but you know what? I sometimes have looked at paintings, and you go to the Detroit Institute of Arts, you can go to the Museum of Modern Art in New York, and I look at paintings, and sometimes I think, you know, if people didn't know that was an important painting, they would think it was only okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some extraordinary paintings that are just jaw-dropping.
Yes.
What they evoke in one, or at least in me, they drop my jaw. But
yes,
how they wind up to be worth $60 million,
I know, really.
Too far beyond me. Hey, we finally got some open lines. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number, and we're talking about health care. The first procedural bill has passed. Health care, as Barack Obama knows mm-hmm. it, is now a reality. And the details of it, I guess we're going to see as it travels along.
And did you give your arteries a rest yesterday and not eat meat?
Oh, did I? Let me see. Yesterday,
no, I'm saying
Saturday.
To the audience, but
oh, yeah, 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 yeah. You know, I didn't even, I forgot it was that night. I must have eaten. I usually eat meat. I certainly didn't eat meat. I'm wondering whether I ate any fish.
Yeah.
Friday night. No, I didn't.
Good.
No. I had rapini.
Ooh.
You know.
Is that, that's the green.
That's sort of like broccoli. It's called broccoli. Isn't it broccoli? It's called broccoli rabe.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Also. Yeah, right. You just make it with pasta and olive oil, lemon juice, a little bit of capers, fresh Parmesan cheese.
Not
out of the green can. A nice salad, some crusty bread, a little Malbec wine.
You're a catch, Peter.
I am, but I've been caught.
Yes, you've been caught.
I've been caught. Okay, let's continue on with that. So I didn't eat meat. I didn't eat any.
Me neither.
I didn't eat any animal. Well, I ate animal product. We had Parmesan.
Yes, a little dairy.
Yeah, right, a little dairy. Here's Nick in Rochester Hills. Nick, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I just want to remind people who are concerned about the cost of this health bill just passed tonight. The cost of doing nothing is much higher because, first of all, they actually expect to save something like $100 billion over the first 10 years and then $1 trillion over the next 10.
Right.
And second, it's not a zero-sum game of past health insurance reform or save the economy, because people will be more likely to start their own business or become self-employed when they don't have the fear of ever-rising health insurance costs bearing down on them.
Right.
People won't be afraid to change jobs for fear of losing health insurance, which I believe will put pressure on businesses and corporations to really take care of their employees by paying higher wages, which ultimately puts more money in the pockets of the working class, who will actually be able to afford the goods that they labor to build. Third, I mean, the simplest thing is a healthy population is a happier and more productive population, which is good not only for individuals, but society as a whole, both morally and economically. So even though I think this bill is far from perfect, it is a step in the right direction, and hopefully as the fight for healthcare civil rights continues, we can have a single-payer, not-for-profit system. I know there's guys in Congress like Bernie Sanders, Dennis Kucinich, Alan Grayson, and Anthony Weiner who will continue this fight. Because ultimately, what is insurance but a way for people to pool their money together to spread risk? Why should a handful of people be able to take billions of dollars out of that pool of money in the name of profits? that there are people out there who defend this kind of system as a testament to the nature of Stockholm Syndrome, in which people sympathize with those who enslave and oppress them, and how widespread it is in our country.
Well,
well said,
and in fact, better said than most of what I said. And it's like, you know, I said all of that. We don't know for sure how it's going to work out. If there are problems with it, those can be addressed. If it's lacking, it can be added to. If there are sections of it that don't work, it can be they can be removed. But we've got to join the rest of the world. We can't. I mean, even those of us with health care now through our employers, I mean, we're facing rising health care costs. And I mean, I got to tell you that I've never really stopped and figured out, but what the employer takes out of is my employer, WRIF, has increased. All the co-pays have increased. And you know, all of a sudden I walk away from what I thought used to be pretty low. A fee out of my pocket now has really grown tremendously. So leaving things as they are, even if you have health insurance, you're going to be paying lots more. So I appreciate that, Nick. Thank you so much for that. Let's see, 313-298-WRIF. It's Matt in Mount Clemens. Hi, Matt. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter and Julian. How you doing?
Hi.
Good. Thank you.
Good. Hey, Democrats finally did something, eh? It's far from perfect, but at least it's a start. Someone finally got a backbone. I don't understand all the opposition to this. To me, it comes down to the bottom line. 32 million Americans will not have health care as a result of this. And if you're against that, that's unsympathetic and very inhumane, in my opinion.
Right. Well, have no heart.
Well, Matt, there are a lot of people like that. And for people who have only self-interest, there's enough in here that would create enough basis for self-interest as well. So, because, you know, people, they say, oh, you know, I've got health insurance. Who cares? Well, you know, they lose their job. They don't have health care. They have a catastrophic injury or illness, and suddenly their highly vaunted health care that they thought they were so smug about, the rug is pulled out from under them and say, sorry, pal, you have reached the cap, and you're out on your duff. So even a lot of the people that are opposed to it benefit for it. And as I said at the beginning of the show, so many of these teabaggers are older Americans, and right now they're getting what they want to deny the rest of the population, which is single-payer universal health care, because they're 65. It's called Medicare, right?
Exactly. I didn't know all these teabaggers were so wealthy.
I love that he went with us on the name.
Yeah.
They're the only ones that their taxes are going up. If you make more than $200,000 or $250,000, so.
And even if you were...
look at all these idiots out there, they make that much money? Are you kidding me?
And if you were that loaded, and if I will say this, I think I'll speak for Peter. I usually don't, I try not to, but I will.
Already.
If you were like a millionaire, multimillionaire, and had health insurance, you would still want for this to happen,
sure,
right?
Of course.
You would think you would. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
What's about money that ruins people?
You know, I don't understand, Matt. In fact, someone wrote in a little while ago, Travis.
He was very angry. Charles
and
very
he said
upset.
If I made as much money as Rush Limbaugh, suddenly I wouldn't be such a
left-wing freak.
A left-wing freak. Why wouldn't you, in fact, get to be more and more of a left-wing freak?
Yeah.
The more money you made, because, gee, you got everything you want, and then you've got all this excess capital. I mean, look at the movie stars that give away so much. And
do some good in the world.
Yeah, I don't understand that. Why does having a lot of money make you greedy? It should make you the opposite. You could be greedy when you're poor. I want more. I want more.
Yeah.
I want to consume more. And but then when you got it all, you go, hey, I can relax. I got it all.
I think I'll help these people.
I can start giving it away, right?
I agree.
What's up?
Greedy and ignorant.
What's up with these people?
Absolutely.
Thank
Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Calling.
Yeah, indeed. I just put the lock on them. There we go. Pushing the wrong buttons. There we go. Okay. I'm not following this well. Okay, here we are. Ron and Warren. Ron, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing, Pete?
I'm a little bit of a cold, but I'm okay, and I'm here for an historic day.
Good show tonight.
Thank you.
Hey,
I just wanted to mention, you know, first I think the government should start watching. I mean, it seems like there's so many frauds perpetrated against Medicare and Medicaid. People, you know, these phony supply companies, that medical supply companies get these people's information somehow, and they start billing the government. And these people that come in from other countries have babies here, and then they leave.
What?
You know,
who does that?
It's been on the news, you know, for years.
Yeah, you got to turn off Fox News. You won't be.
They
much
come here and have babies and leave.
Yeah, what? Other countries fly in here.
Like what other countries?
Whatever medical thing they have, I'm not sure that I even know that I know what I'm talking about.
From where? What countries are they from? Right
on the news, and people flying in from other countries.
Well, wait a minute. If you're flying in from flying in as you would, that
then
would
you have money, then you want to have your baby in the United
States.
So
why would you, if you
you're paying,
if you lived in Quebec or London or Copenhagen or Rome or Paris, why
or
would you,
London, where you just go in, have the baby leave. You don't even have to.
Every one of those countries has universal health care that you wouldn't have to fly. Listen, every system has abuse. Every single system has a corrupt edge to it. And if there are, if corruption or abuses gets to be a cost ineffective aspect of it, enforcement has to be increased. But normally what happens, Ron, is that people take these anecdotes and then suggest, without coming to any conclusion, but suggest this indicts the entire system as a whole. So I'm not, make a general statement off it. I mean, for one thing, I don't think what you're talking about has any appreciable effect on any of the healthcare systems, but make sort of a general statement about that.
Well, what I'm saying is, I mean, have you not heard about all these medical supplies defrauding all the government out of millions of dollars?
Oh, yeah, there always is. I mean, it all pales, for instance, besides defense spending. I mean, that's where we're getting ripped off with the hundreds of billions. Yeah, I mean, if there is, well, let me put it this way. If it is a cost-ineffective situation, and I don't even want to get into when you hit that threshold, then there should be more enforcement. But let's say we know that there's a level of corruption, doctors billing for stuff that shouldn't be billed for, like in Medicare and Medicaid and what have you. So what do you think should be done? We should end the systems?
No, I think that we should increase the, you know,
enforcement,
security, the enforcement of all these things before we move on to some other things. I mean, if there's a hole in the bucket, we got to plug that first.
Well, I don't think there's a hole in the bucket. I think that there's problems, and we what we got to do is figure out how to. I mean, see, one of the things is when you have this private health insurance, it's more susceptible to that, and I mean, people take it for granted. I mean, companies like Lockheed Martin and Boeing and all these big companies like that, they have been fined at sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars for fraud and misbilling and what have you. And they're just back there at the trough building their little weapons of war that they're going to, you know, destroy people's countries and villages and all that. At least in their Medicare, if you get convicted of Medicare fraud, you don't get to go back into the system. But I don't know. I don't know what the level of fraud and abuse is. But I agree with you. If it's raised to the level of a problem, that we ought to deal with it. The fact that is the bucket have a hole in it? I wouldn't say that's the case. Okay, I hit a little button here, nothing happens. Thank you, man. What is going on here? How come my button doesn't work?
I don't know.
Oh my
the
God!
The wrong button.
Look at that! Isn't that where it is?
Oh, Peter, what have you done?
Isn't this where it's supposed to be?
I think so. Better take another call.
I didn't do it. You know how to start this again, don't you? We have. It used to be so easy, folks. It used to be so easy for these damn computers. I would scrap them all. I'll go back to 1995 easily. Dominic and Taylor. Hi, Dominic. You're on the air. Hey, Dominic.
It's kind of along the same lines as that, but for the welfare thing again. I don't know. I know you guys don't like to watch a lot of the news channels, but I caught like the butt end of it, but it was on CNN this weekend.
Okay.
They had a thing where like I think they said almost 60 businesses were fined or put out of business because they were taking the people's bridge cards, asking them if they wanted money back, and like say they had $250 on there,
yeah,
the business would take $100 of it and give them $150 cash.
Wow. Hey, you know what?
Okay, so but as we said, there's corruption throughout. So, right.
Well, here's what we have. I mean, here's the root of the problem. I mean, when you have a society which has such incredible disparities of income that people do all sorts of things to get by. So you have shady businessmen, and then you have desperately poor people that are willing to corrupt a system that's set up in a manner, and they're abusing it. But what that really says to me is, why do we have this situation where we have people paying $60 million for a painting, as I was talking about earlier, and then a few blocks away, people going through garbage cans for collectible bottles. I mean, the society is so out of skew. So the other thing, to make sure that there was no fraud, would be to just end any kind of program that benefits, the poor.
Do you know someone who always seems well-connected?
Right,
here's your chance to one-up that person and then some. Welcome to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online connection to half off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses. Simply log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com for special online coupons and discounts you can't get anywhere else. This week, the Spring Into Savings Sale includes unbelievable deals from Mill Street Grill in Pontiac, Dicko Dow's in Birmingham, Timbuktu Internet Cafe in Auburn Hills, Madison Park Bowl in Madison Heights, and Red Pepper Deli in Northville. All you have to do is visit MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. You'll save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your computer. Heck, you don't even have to get dressed. No shirt, no shoes, no problem.
Shot naked, man. Yeah!
Dressed or not, just go to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, and you'll be connected to these incredible deals and more. MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, man. Hey, like, this chair is really cold.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
We're back with more Night Call. 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julian.
All right, thank you very much. Yeah, nothing's working right tonight except,
except our brains.
Our lively show. My throat isn't working too good.
The phones are working.
Our machines are not doing like they should. So we're not going to have any, I see what happened here.
I can come over and work on that if you want while you're talking.
Okay, go ahead. Hey, at, let me see here. I hope I'm going to be in your way, aren't I? At 1 a.m., going to be interviewing Dalia Wasfi. She was born in New York. She's to an American Jewish mother who was herself the daughter of a Holocaust survivor and an Iraqi Muslim father. And she spent 3 months in Iraq with her family in 2006. And she's talking on the occasion of the 7th anniversary of Bush's lie that got us, that started the war in Iraq, right? Okay, let's go back to our phones. And here is Sean. Sean's in Allen Park. Hi, Sean. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you guys?
We're good.
I'm calling in, and I just want to talk about some things that you guys talk about. First of all, it's health care reform. I think you guys are totally wrong. I hope you guys don't cut me off as you usually do. I don't really respect what you talk about. I'm a Republican, full, you know, to the north and everything like that. The first thing I want to say.
Wait. What do you mean to the north?
Well, whatever. You want to talk to me about that, but let me just speak what I have to say, and then you can razz me about everything else.
No, I didn't know what you meant. You're Republican to the north.
Well,
is that a new kind? We don't know this kind of Republican.
Well, I'm just talking about. Can I just speak what I have to say? Are you guys going to harass me?
Well, I don't know.
Just say it. Spit it out, man.
This is radio. There's nothing fair about it, Sean.
Healthcare. If you guys want to talk about something, let's look to Canada. And that's what I mean about to the north.
Oh.
You go to Canada, you pay $8 per Big Mac. You pay $8 per draft beer. And
Where are you going in Canada, man?
You in a big city?
Someone's ripping you off. I go to Canada a lot.
What are you talking about? I'm talking about going across the Blue Water Bridge.
And someone that's probably says, "Hey, here's that guy from Allen Park. He's so dumb.
Charge
he's a Republican. Let's charge him double."
Well, you know what? You guys have no idea. You guys are in your little cocoon, and you have no idea about what's going on.
Well, wait a minute, Sean.
Are you kidding me?
I bet you I go to Canada more than you do.
The same people that said that Mayor Coleman Young got a bad rap, too.
We never said that. So please don't be... How old are you?
30 years old.
You can't even remember Coleman Young.
I remember when he said, I don't know anything about no goddamn cougarans. I remember that. And I remember you saying specifically, are you listening to me right now? You saying that.
Why are you so mad? An angry Republican, Peter.
Have you ever thought, Sean, about maybe an anger management course?
Hey, have you ever thought about what's really going on?
Yeah, that's what we do every week.
Let's go back to $8 Burger Kings and $8
No, it's McDonald's.
I go to Canada a lot. One of the reasons I go there is things seem fairly reasonably priced.
Where's that? In the city of Detroit?
No, it's called Windsor. It's called Grand Bend. It's called Toronto. And Toronto, you know, it's an expensive city. But you can, you know, there's lots of places there where you can find things. Montreal, you know, I like that.
Are you going to let me speak? Or are you going to cut me off like you usually do?
Well,
he's still talking.
You're tempting me, but go ahead.
Well, can I speak?
Okay. Yeah, go ahead. So you got $8 burgers and $8 beers. So what the hell does that have to do with anything?
Let me talk to you about something.
You're still talking.
I have a couch in Grand Bend. I know about what's going on in Canada. I've been to Toronto. I paid $8 per beer. And that's just not in Toronto. That's in Saline, Michigan. Canada as well.
So you've been to Canada. You've been to Canada a couple of times.
You have a cottage.
You're basing your entire knowledge of Canada because you have a cottage.
You're trying to combat me. I'm trying to speak right now. Can I speak?
Maybe not.
You're just so appalling. You're so appalling, you know.
Wait,
you're so angry.
You have a cottage in Grand Bend? Wait. You have a cottage in Grand Bend?
All right.
Do you have a cottage in Grand Bend?
How about the Cougar Lands?
Do you have a cottage in Grand Bend? Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Do you have a cottage? Do you have a cottage in Grand Bend? Sean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you go in Grand Bend? I know most of the places there.
Well, actually, Grand Bend got the third best sunset in National Geographic.
No wonder we cut this guy off.
You guys know that?
Well, now we do. That's wonderful. Wow. We love a good sunset. We love sunsets and sunrises. Sunrise, sunset, sunrise, sunset.
We're cutting you off. You're too crazy. What in the hell was he talking about? I remember those Cougar Rams.
He's very angry.
Yeah.
Well. Ah, we're used to it.
Okay. Here's Jeff in Plymouth. Jeff, hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I think that guy may have had a few of those $8 beers tonight.
Well, I think so.
You know where you get $8?
He's mad about it.
Where do you get $8 beers? You get $8 beers.
New York City.
No, at Meadowbrook and at DTE.
Oh, right. True. Right here.
That I will never drink a beer there. Actually, I do sometimes.
I like drinking the beer specials, so I'm good with that.
I like free beer. Actually, I don't drink beer. I don't like beer at all.
Okay. It's a very historical night with the voting of the health care.
Right.
Yes.
Only thing which concerns me is what happened in the state of Massachusetts where they have a health care which is real similar to this.
It's been very successful there.
Well, there have been some problems too.
The state treasurer was on the news. I saw it, and they had, if they did not get the stimulus money, that they would have been insolvent. And so I'm kind of concerned with the state of Michigan, because a lot of this funding is going to go towards the states. And I'm concerned because obviously we're having a hard time paying for schools, and obviously for our roads, Michigan roads are horrible. I'm concerned. Are we actually going to be able to get the health care that we get now Well, I suppose if you don't have any health care, new health care would be great.
But yeah. I mean, we were saying earlier that the states have been cutting back on Medicaid payments to the point where doctors aren't even able to, aren't able to take the patients any longer. You know, if you think about it, though, and if this as a deep, much, much deeper situation, and kind of what I was talking with Dominic, and I'm sorry, Dominic, for cutting you off like that. We were having some bad technical problems here. Is why are we scrambling around in the wealthiest country in the world for enough to pay for a healthcare system that where every other country in the world seems to be able to find the money, every other industrialized country, to provide that? And I mean, why do we have so many citizens that in order, when they get food stamps, actually have to get ripped off by dishonest businessmen who are going to, take, give them cash and take part of it back? I mean, that's really where the root of the problem is.
But right now we're scrambling for anything, though. Right now we're scrambling to pay for our schools. We're scrambling for our roads.
Well, you know, we're not scrambling for our military budget. We're going to spend $1 trillion this year, where we probably need, any real world, about $150 billion, like the rest of the world spends.
Well, one thing is obviously we're in wars, which we'd like to leave, but our leadership isn't going to get us out anytime soon. But that still doesn't answer the issues of what we're creating in new bills, and that's what I'm talking about, is this health care, which I want, but is it going to work because we don't have the finances for it?
Well, you know what? It could be. So here we are. Say we come down the road and we've promised everything and we've set up the system, and suddenly we're facing a financial crisis. What do we do? Well, we have to do what we would do within a family. How are we allocating the money? Well, if all a guy is just buying this huge gun collection and keeps adding to it, even though there's no need for it, he might say, maybe we should buy a few less guns. And whether you talk about guns or butter, I mean, that's the problem. We got all the money in the world for social guns, but no, not enough money for social butter. And we've got to start taking care of our needs and not go along as we have been. Or you could very well be right. We might not be able to financially afford this, even though we were told that, in fact, that this health care plan will have the effect of reducing the deficit. But, I mean, we've got to get the money up front to be able to finance the whole thing. Is it going to be there? I don't know. All right, thank you very much. I'm going to have to rush along through some of these because we're getting towards the end of the show. Here is David in Brighton. Hi, David. You're on the air. David, hi. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks. Hi. My Facebook profile says socialist revolutionary as my political stance, so fellow traveler, no further need to get into that. But I just want to offer an anecdote. I was raised upper middle class in suburban Detroit, and I, I have a couple hundred Facebook friends, and because of that social circle, I would say over half of them are actually conservatives, and even though my dad is like John Birch Society, off the rim, conservative and all that. I'm a socialist, but the anecdote I want to share is that I had a good career and made several hundred thousand dollars a year for many years, and then for family reasons, voluntarily elected to leave a position in order to. After a divorce, to spend time with my son, and did the COBRA thing for a while, which was like $800 a month, and had money saved up, and then I went through that, and my mom had to have a liver transplant, and so I just had more pressing issues that I had to deal with. But then once COBRA ended, and I was still focused on family rather than financial matters, came down with an MRSA staph infection, MRSA staph infection, and cellulitis in my lower left leg, and went to U of M Hospital in, for about 2 weeks. And I was on death's door, dilated, excruciating pain, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know whether this really, even though I'm a, I'm a socialist and I'd like to think of myself as a revolutionary, but that's probably braggadocio. Anyway, I was unable to pay, had no insurance, went in there, and actually, U of M Health System, did write it off.
Well, they will. I mean, in fact, hospitals lose billions and billions of dollars a year, and increasingly hospitals are closing, particularly ones that are set up for the poor, like in Atlanta and South L.A. and what have you. And the fact that we can't even keep hospitals going, yet, as I said, we can pay $1 trillion a year for health care or for warfare, is a real indictment of the system. Dave, I got to move on, so I appreciate this story. Sounds like you've had some real troubles. I hope it works out. All right. Let's see. Here is Dan in Detroit. Dan, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. Julian.
Hi.
Last time I talked to you guys, I opened my door and said it sounded like I was stepping on my cat, so I promise that's not going to happen.
Oh, great.
Okay, okay, good. The cat's safe.
Yeah. I just want to talk about welfare real quick. I agree with you guys 100%. There's a lot of corruption and favoritism that goes on with it, but I would like to say to put some of the blame on the organizations and the management themselves. My best friend's mom works at one of the family counseling places in Detroit, and she just says, you know, there is nobody knows what they're doing. Everybody has paperwork here, paperwork there. It's completely unorganized. It takes people 3-4 months just to come in and get an appointment. People are, you know, quitting and retiring and just leaving all their stuff in a bin, saying, okay, it takes them 3-4 months to go through it and figure out, you know, who needs what, who's going through what, who they were working with. It's just a complete management disaster.
Well, I can imagine. And part of the problem is the system being overwhelmed. When you have such an enormous percentage of a wealthy country actually in economic dire straits, when you have now a recession with millions of people losing their job, when and on, that the system is way out of balance. I mean, our social economic political system, so it's the kind of thing that that feeds and corruption that creates the basis of it at all levels, and it creates cynicism among the administrators, incompetence, turnover, everything you said. So as long as we're going to have a society with such a maldistribution of wealth, well, I think we're going to wind up not solving the problem. So ultimately, I don't even think it's in administration or in incompetence of administration, but really rooted deeply in the system itself. All right, Dan, thank you. And we're going to have to end in a little bit, so let me really go through these here. Terry in Shelby Township. Hi, Terry.
Hey, Peter. I've waited a long time to speak with you, probably 20-plus years.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, oh, you're welcome. I think you're great on the radio. But to the point, I was talking to my fiancé a few months back about this health care, and I agree, you know, in a country as wealthy as ours, everyone should have free health care. But the topic that came up was for anyone that makes $30,000 or less a year, they'll get free health care. And, of course, just read about this weekend, a father that was killed by his 16-year-old son, and they had 10 children between him and his wife.
Wow.
And, you know, here I did go to school and become educated. I did put myself through school. I have a graduate-level degree. But it takes away a lot of my incentive, and I think some other people, too, to even go to school. If you could theoretically, and not to be mean or politically incorrect, sell drugs, drop out of high school early, have free health care. And my comment...
Well, let me just answer it.
Who really wants that life anyway?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But no, here, you're right. The other thing is, I mean, I'm not sure where the cutoff is. But it's like I said, if you make, say, $35,500 a year, you're not eligible for a subsidy. And if you make $35,000, you are. And yet the person are making almost the identical income. That's why this whole compromise is going to wind up to ultimately be unfair, and why we should have just a single payer universal health care. So if you're, no matter who you are, as a right of citizenship, whether you're ultra wealthy or ultra poor, you walk in, you say, I'm sick, and they say, okay, welcome. You're part of the community. You wouldn't have to be screwing around with all this. All right, thank you. Appreciate your call. Here's Richard in Farmington. Richard, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening, Peter. You've done a great job here tonight. I'm really wondering how Sean got to be that foolish in only 30 years, and I thought Nick was one of the best callers in the history of your program, as a matter of fact. People have been calling up all night long, and you've been talking about it. How do we pay for this? The fact of the matter is we're paying for it now. Every time somebody goes to the emergency room and can't pay that bill, as you mentioned, the rest of us wind up paying that bill. I was 2 days in the hospital in Ann Arbor back in January, and the bill came to $52,000. God, we've got insurance, but it was $52,000 for just 2 days.
Insane.
And it was a procedure I needed to have. So, again, you know, it's not an ideal step. I mean, I'm with you all the way on single payer, but, you know, we got the ball rolling on this thing. I think we should be thankful for that.
Right.
Well, I think so, and we'll see. And it's like I said, if it's flawed, we can fix it. If it needs more money, we've got to allocate money away from the waste of
the wars
and get it into what we need.
Peter, two people wrote in and said that the Sean's beers, Joe wrote and Richard, you get the $8 beers at the booby bars.
Oh.
Drinking with the Republicans at the booby bars. That's what he said.
And you don't get, and you just get to look, you don't get to touch, and you know what that creates? Angry men.
Angry men.
Yeah.
Oh, you know.
I mean, this place is, never mind. In Grand Bend, beers are $3.50. You can get, and you can play, what is it, Molson Roulette.
Molson Roulette.
You know, you take cans and you shake one of them up.
Yeah?
And then you open it close to your
Peter,
face.
You don't do this.
No. Hey, folks.
But if you do, I want to be there.
All right. I got to leave a lot of you on hold, so my apologies.
Call next week.
Call next week. I'm sure this will continue. Jade, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jade. You rock.
And this will be a podcast. It'll be on the air by noon tomorrow.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
It's Truck Month at Atchison Ford in Belleville with up to $6,000 in factory rebates on the purchase of a 2010 F-150 now through March 31st. Visit Atchison Ford on the web at atchison.net.
How do you feel about your bank? Someplace right between happy and unhappy? Maybe you'd call it fine or okay. We call that blah. And if you feel blah about your bank, they have you right where they want you. See, as long as you're not unhappy, you're not going to change banks. And as long as you don't leave, they're happy. So if you're blah about your bank, then think about switching to DFCU Financial. We'd love to put a smile on your face. At DFCU Financial, we're not ruled by Wall Street. We're more about Main Street. We're local. We're Michigan. And instead of charging fees, we choose to give back. Over 70 million cash back to our members since 2006. So, blah about your bank? Come on in. Anyone can join. We've been around for 60 years working hard to make people happy. Discover a better way to bank at DFCU Financial. Visit DFCUfinancial.com. Member NCUA Equal Housing Lender.
Mid-Michigan, if you've had credit problems and you're in need of an auto loan, Lasco Ford in Fenton has good news. You're approved. Right now, you can go to LascoFord.com and get pre-approved. And if Lasco Ford can't get you an auto loan, they'll pay you $1,000 cash. Lasco Ford has the national lenders that will give you an auto loan at an affordable payment, like a 2007 Ford Fusion for only $149 a month. Lasco Ford also has programs for customers that may have had foreclosures, loan modifications, or repossessions in the past. And this month at Lasco Ford, you can choose from zero down or deferred payments up to 6 months. If you've had credit problems or have been turned down by another dealer, call Lasco Ford today and get approved. If you're turned down, they'll pay you $1,000 cash. You can visit www.lascoford.com to get pre-approved 24 hours a day at Lasco Ford. Open until 8 p.m. weekdays, Saturdays 9 to 5, or visit lascoford.com.
Now, a message from one of the co-founders of Adam, the American Divorce Association for Men.
Gentlemen, for years Adam has been addressing men who are facing divorce. Today we want to talk to men facing a happier, yet equally scary situation, marriage. Do you know that prenuptial agreements are valid in this state? Do you know that a prenuptial may not only protect the property you already have, but also the property you acquired during the marriage, including your entire pension? Do you know that a prenup may be used to eliminate any potential claim for alimony? Call Adam at 248-356-ADAM and we can answer all of your questions. I've never had a divorce client who didn't wish he was smart enough to have gotten a prenup. That goes for blue-collar guys to multimillionaire business owners. Look, you buy homeowners insurance year after year to protect you from the 1 in 1,000 chance your home will burn to the ground. Don't you think a prenup is advisable to protect you from the 50% chance you may face a divorce? Call Adam at 248-356-ADAM. That's 248-356-2326 or on the web at adamdivorcelaw.com.
Do you know someone who always seems well-connected? Here's your chance to one-up that person and then some. Welcome to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online connection to half off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses. Simply log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com for special online coupons and discounts you can't get anywhere else. This week, the Spring Into Savings Sale includes unbelievable deals from Mill Street Grill in Pontiac, Dicko Dow's in Birmingham, Timbuktu Internet Cafe in Auburn Hills, Madison Park Bowl in Madison Heights, and Red Pepper Deli in Northville. All you have to do is visit MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. You'll save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your computer. Heck, you don't even have to get dressed. No shirt, no shoes, no problem.
Shot naked, man. Yeah!
Dressed or not, just go to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, and you'll be connected to these incredible deals and more. MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, man. Hey, like, this chair is really cold.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Grow your own pot
of tomatoes.
Stealth Hydro is Michigan's number one hydroponic supply store. Located in Ypsilanti's Depot Town at 15 East Cross Street, their hydroponic kits start at just $34.95. It's easy. Stealth Grow, Stealth Loom, and Stealth Micronutrient Packets eliminate the need for measuring. Simply fill the reservoir bucket to the indicated line with water and add the required feeding packet. That's it. Beginner to experienced grower, anyone can do this.
Even you.
Stealth Hydro's friendly and experienced team is standing by to answer your questions. Before and after the sale. Just call 866-998-1916, toll free 866-998-1916, or visit StealthHydro.com. Stealth Hydro also has everything you need, kits, lights, and nutrients. Get started today. Visit StealthHydro.com.
Grow your own pot
of tomatoes.
Call Stealth Hydro, 866-998-1916, or visit StealthHydro.com.
We've got visibility now at about 10 feet. 10 feet if we're lucky. You're going to have to slow down because I can't see anything in front of
Man, I can't afford to slow down too much. Sergeant's saying that up to 40 cars and trucks could be stranded up there. Man, we've got to get to those people.
Ever imagine anything like this is going to happen when you join the Guard?
You mean driving blind down a highway in the storm of the century?
The National Guard is a unique force. Citizen soldiers who are just as prepared and committed to do battle with nature here at home in our communities as they are against the enemies of our nation. These are your neighbors. Men and women who work or go to college, have families, hobbies, live life to the fullest. They train part-time, close to home, and they are always ready.
Slow down, slow down. There's definitely a car on the side of the road up there.
Rescuing people. Now, that's what I imagine when I join.
Do you have what it takes to head into the heart of the storm? Check out NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Michigan National Guard. Aired by the Michigan Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Well, thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. I think most of you are aware there's a couple of wars, hot wars going on that the United States is involved in. Some, any number of covert activities from Colombia to Somalia. We're the country with the largest military budget in the world. In fact, we have a military budget that is greater than the combined total of all the countries in the world. So we are essentially a warfare state. We do so, we're told, by our government in order to protect us. We're at war. I just heard the other day a Republican congressman said, and we ought to be aware of that, that we're in a war against terrorism. And in pursuit of those ends, the United States invaded Iraq in 2003, March. In fact, we're at the 7th anniversary. And also, of course, now there's a hotter shooting war going on in Afghanistan. We're told we've won. I guess that means the United States and United States foreign policy, military policy, has won in Iraq because there's now the beginnings of a democratic government. When we've spoken about the war in the past, either in Iraq or in Afghanistan, it's usually been people that have made policy observations or criticisms or observations about these wars. Beginning, of course, way back on this program where I and others challenged the whole idea that there were weapons of mass destruction. I mean, even I knew there wasn't. I don't know why the rest of the media couldn't have figured that out. But I'd like to bring a guest on to the Peter Werbe Show that comes at it both from an understanding of policy, but also very personal. Dalia Wasfi is a New Yorker. She was born to a Jewish mother, and in fact, her mother was the daughter of Holocaust survivors, and her father was an Iraqi Muslim. She has a degree from the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine, and she spent 3 months in Iraq with her family in 2006, and she's been speaking against the occupation since 2004. She's currently working on a book on her experiences, and it's a pleasure to welcome Dalia Wasfi to our program. Welcome. Appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, this is quite a number of cross currents here with an American Jewish mother and Iraqi Muslim father. How did that all come together?
I'll be in therapy for a long, long time. my dad was born and raised in Iraq, and he, through the education system there, he went to university and did well enough when he graduated to earn a government scholarship to pursue his graduate studies overseas. And he ended up coming to Washington, D.C., was studying at Georgetown and living at the International Student House at DuPont Circle. My mom was born and raised in New York, graduated from Barnard, and her field was international relations, and she was at the School for Advanced International Studies in D.C. as well. Because of her field, she wanted to live at the International Student House, and that's where my parents met, and the rest is history.
Hmm.
They met in 63, got married in 68, had my sister in 69, and I was born in 1971.
So that antipathy that we see now frequently between the American Jewish community and Muslims wasn't very intense back then, I assume.
Well, it actually, it was during the 1960s. I mean, there have been tensions in the Arab world since the creation of the State of Israel in 1948 because it is a colonial settler state, and there was ethnic cleansing of the native peoples, Palestinians, to effect the creation of that state. My mom, at the time, had grown up in a traditional Jewish, which was a traditional Zionist household, and she accepted the Zionist motto of a land without a people for a people without a land, which was a lie. Yes, the Jews did not have a homeland for their own, but there were people living in Palestine, and they had been for thousands of years. When my mom met my father and the other Arab students living at the International Student House, that was the first time she heard another perspective, and those were really the facts on the ground. And once she knew the truth, there was really no going back.
Well, it's an unusual opinion, or am I wrong, to have an American Jew have that opinion of Israel, that it's a colonial settler state? I mean, normally it appears the American Jewish community gives great support to Israel and most of its policies. In fact, usually there's greater opposition to Israeli government policy inside of Israel than there is in the American Jewish community.
That's absolutely right. And it's slowly changing as the information gets disseminated. But people are recognizing, especially as the crimes of the Israeli government progress, especially as the situation of an apartheid state comes to light, really in this country. Most of the rest of the world already knows it, but our media is limited here. We only see a certain set of images here. So that's slowly changing, and there are many groups, Jewish Voices for Peace, the International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network, that are popping up left and right to seeking justice, just a just solution.
Well, I'm sure many people are wishing this was a phone-in talk show. They're probably reaching for their phones or yelling back at the radio, or maybe nodding their heads in agreement. But let's move on to your experiences that came about because of having an Iraqi Muslim father. And so in 1991, with the first Gulf War and the United States invasion of Iraq, you were, according to, if I'm doing my math right, you were 20 years old, and you and your mother and father were living in the United States.
That's absolutely right. After my dad finished his studies and earned his PhD, he had to pay back that scholarship by teaching back at Basra University in Iraq. So the first 5 years of my life were back and forth between Iraq and the U.S. But we came back in 1977, and I've lived here ever since. So that's correct. I was in my sophomore year of college in 1991 when the buildup to the Gulf War was happening. And, yeah, that was I remember that day very well.
Well, tell us about that day. I mean, how did your family react? And also, maybe in the answer, you can tell us what your father thought of Saddam Hussein.
Well, my dad, when we left in 1977, I mean, my dad's entire family was in Iraq, and he didn't want to leave, but it became necessary for him to leave because at the university, he was wanting to make some changes in his department, and at that time, everything is tied to the political system. So he became sort of marked as an agitator, and that's very, very dangerous under the Ba'athist regime. So when we left, we were actually, unbeknownst to me, I mean, I was 5 years old. I was just excited to get back to American television. But it was really a dicey move to get out of Iraq at the time. And since that time, because of the rule, because of the mistakes that, as we perceived it, that were made, and the way the Iraqi people have suffered, there was no love lost for Saddam Hussein. But what he did do was stand up to the West and say, if you want to talk about troops moving into other countries, you have to talk about the daily invasions of Palestine and the refugee camps that are being conducted by Israel. There should be no double standard.
Mm-hmm.
That day,
yeah.
Back in 1991, I remember I was at home. It was still my winter break, and in the 5 o'clock in the evening, and my dad called me to the family room, and he said they started bombing. And I started, after a few minutes, I noticed that I was nervously humming a song, and it was REM's It's the End of the World as We Know It.
Hmm.
And it was for so many people.
Dalia Wasmi is my guest on the Peter Werby Show, and she has lived in Iraq. Spent 3 months there with her family in 2006. I want to get to that in a second. Her website is liberatethis.com. Liberatethis.com. There'll be a link on my website, Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E.com, as well. And Dalia, are you bilingual? Do you speak both languages?
Oh, I wish I could. When it comes to swearing, I am. Actually, I'm multilingual when it comes to bad words. But no, I learned English when I was little. That's what my parents spoke at home. So I got English. And I got nothing.
Okay. But then you spent 3 months in Iraq with your family in 2006. Here, the resistance and the U.S. invasion and occupation was going full blast. What was the reason for going there?
I had gone initially, my first trip back since we left in 1977 was just a 19-day trip in 2004, I had made the decision to do that. It was the first time I wasn't in school or working, and I thought, you know, okay, the regime fell, I'm going to go see the family. So it was kind of a crazy decision, but it was really life-changing. I was going through some difficult things in my own personal life. And once I was there with my family, seeing really the way they had suffered and seeing the impact, I mean, I always knew the number of bombs that we had dropped on Iraq, but to see firsthand the destruction that my tax dollars have brought to Iraq was really devastating for me, and I felt a tremendous amount of guilt. So it was just a quick trip in and out. I didn't know what the situation would be because there was no government, but I wanted to spend a longer time with my family and really get to know them. My cousins, who I was meeting for the first time because most of them were born after I'd left in 77. So it was really my opportunity to go and see them. And it was unbelievable how difficult their struggle for survival is on a daily basis.
Hmm. Now, your mother, as we said earlier, was Jewish and your father an Iraqi. And so according to ethnic lineage in the Jewish tradition, you're 100% Jewish. So how did the Iraqi family, end of your family, relate to that aspect of you?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. But also by Islamic law, you are what your father is. Which makes you
okay, so you got it both ways.
We resolve that by exchanging presents at Christmas every year.
There you go.
But no, it was it was very different the way each family handled the mixture. For my father, after his father had passed away, he became the patriarch of the family. My father was one of 10 kids, and he really during the years of economic sanctions, he's the only reason I have family to visit today, because he was here earning a salary and was able to send money to his family. They were starving under the economic sanctions. So he was really proved to be the great strength of the family. And of course, it had preceded that. So whoever my dad chose to marry was fine with them.
So there never was any prejudice expressed, or that you were part of the Zionist enemy or anything like that?
No. It was actually part of the reason we left in 77, as I'm learning now as I'm writing the book, is that, again, with my dad stirring things up at the university, he was concerned that people could accuse that that my mom was an Israeli spy. You know, anything could have happened. You just need one person saying something and starting a rumor. So, but of course, my mom's politics are for justice and as progressive as my dad's and my own. On the other side of things, my grandmother was not happy, to say the least, when my parents got married.
This is the Jewish side of the family.
That's right. That's right. Because they wanted her to marry a Jew, and not only did she not marry a Jew, but she did probably one of the worst things she could have done, and that was to marry an Arab. So that there was this element of racism there, but once my sister was born, things started to smooth over, and then when I was born, it was better. But still, I sensed tensions when I was young.
Mm-hmm. Dahlia Wasserman is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. Her website is liberatethis.com. She spent 3 months in Iraq with her family in 2006, and so this your mother or father didn't come with you. You just visited your father's side of the family, correct?
Yep, I went by myself.
Wow.
Again, kind of crazy, but it actually lent me a sense of immunity, especially the second time I went, because it's very unusual. It's just not done for a woman to be traveling by herself, especially in a situation where there's no security. And here I come with my American passport, but I covered my hair to be respectful. And if I, with my hair covered and my mouth shut, I look like I belong there. But as soon as I open my mouth and people know I don't understand Arabic, I'm a complete enigma. I'm like an animal at the zoo. So I think that helped me get through some security situations. But, I traveled by myself and, spent those 3 months there in Basra in 2006.
Well, Basra was, in the south of Iraq, and, that was the scene. Maybe you should remind us about what the situation was in 2006, but at different points. That was an area of, if I remember correctly, of British occupation, and there had been all sorts of resistance and bombings and firefights and destruction. What did you find there in 2006? Was there still conflict going on?
That's absolutely right. That was the British part of the occupation, and the British have left now, and American troops have taken over. But there were situations. I remember it took me a while to adjust to seeing the tanks driving up and down the street, because I'm not used to that living in Delaware. It was just so surreal to me. After a while, I got used to it. But I was there in February 2006 when the shrine in Samarra was destroyed. And there was this significant escalation in violence. Of course, at the time, it was blamed on sectarianism, but there were reports that my cousin translated for me on the radio of Sunni imams, the religious leaders, and Shia imams coming together, praying together, saying, this is not us. And so this is typical of the external forces of divide and conquer. But what happened at that time with that escalation of violence, it was frightening, because we were basically under house arrest. We couldn't go outside, and even the British wouldn't come in the streets. It was too dangerous for them, they decided. And they started flying in planes overhead. So it's really, I had an escape. I knew I was there temporarily and I wasn't coming back, for any time soon. But for the people who live there, who have, there's no end in sight, it's unbelievable their courage and determination to survive.
Well, one expects during wartime, in particular when you're being bombed, that all life almost stops, daily life as we know, that everything is grim, everything is fear, everything is mourning. And I remember reading about when Sarajevo was being shelled, that as soon as the shelling would stop, people would just come out and go to the cafes and try to, you know, reconnect. What was life, steal a line from Talking Heads song, what was life during wartime in Basra? What was it, on a personal level with your father's family, your family?
Well, the thing that had changed dramatically was the status of women. It changed dramatically after the invasion. And that follows anywhere you go in the world. When you lose law and order, women and children become the number one targets for violence, because they are the most susceptible to crimes of violence and kidnapping. So as a woman, and, of course, with the added touch of me being an American, my family was terrified for my safety. So I could barely leave the house. My cousins who were male, they went out, they got some jobs to do and just trying to make a little bit of money. Even that was hard again because the economy was so devastated by sanctions, and then employment was selected by American contractors who imported cheap labor into the country. But they did their best to just make a normal life for themselves. But when the electricity comes a few hours a day only, and it's unpredictable when you'll have it and when you won't. And the access to water depends on the pump that runs on electricity. These become the daily obstacles of your life. And for me, spoiled American who expects 24 hours a day of electricity and water, those are luxuries. Hmm. And it was so hard. And on top of that is the shooting in the streets and occasionally, not so much in Basra, but in other cities like Baghdad, with car bombs and other explosions. People achieve a norm of survival so that when there is a break in the situation, you go out and you go buy food, not knowing when the next assault will come. But I saw in my family's homes, they had bowls and bowls of water stored, just saving it just in case. And that was after 13 years of questionable water supply. And that's how they still live today.
Well, and why did you stay so long? You were there 3 months in Basra in Iraq. You could have said, well, I've seen the family for 10 days. Let me get back to the U.S.
Yeah, I won't spend 3 months again. It took me 6 months to recover from the difficulty I had there. And, so what my family experiences, I just can't imagine. But my main reason for going was that, until I went to go visit, my father was the only connection between, me, my family here, and all of my paternal relatives there. And, not wanting to think about it, but being realistic that at some point my generation was going to be the oldest living generation. And I told my cousins that I want to know you. I want you to know me so that when we're the only ones around, I won't lose you. And I reap a tremendous amount of joy from my relationships with them. It's as close as, and maybe sometimes closer than relationship with my own siblings, but they're very, very dear to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, I said at the beginning of our interview with you, Dalia Wasfi, that most people, that the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, but particularly Iraq, are kind of out of our consciousness. Yet there's a couple U.S. soldiers that die each week. It's not even clear how. That's not even reported. You can just see it in totals. And about 400 Iraqi civilians will die in a typical month. Yet there's sort of the old I guess what I'm asking is your reaction to this idea. You got to break a few eggs to make an omelet, and so we took this horrid dictatorship who turned out not to have weapons of mass destruction, but was a terrible dictator, albeit supported by the U.S. in the 80s and what have you. But now there's the beginning of a democratic government. So with all the displacement of people, with all the bombing, with all the death, ultimately it's going to wind up to be a better situation. How would you react to that argument?
Well, that depends on who you ask. If you're the CEO of an American corporation, yeah, it's awesome. Money, money, money.
Yeah.
But if you're Iraqi, you're going to get a different story. This is 25% of Iraq's population is devastated. That's over 5 million displaced, both internally and outside the country. Between 1.4 and 1.5 million dead, and another 8 million in dire need of humanitarian aid. This is no success story. The American media is reporting that we've won in Iraq, but I don't know how you win a genocide. I don't know how you win an illegal invasion and occupation. And that's when the terms become important, because this is illegal occupation in Iraq and Afghanistan. And all the bombings in Pakistan are illegal as well. Our obligation to the people of Iraq and Afghanistan, to the people of America, and to the rest of the world is the immediate unconditional withdrawal of American troops and mercenaries from those places. We have plenty of problems here. Healthcare, for example, education, social programs, and the working class is who is paying the price. Those are the people who are sending their sons and daughters overseas to die for corporate profit. It's more than enough already, and it's past time for the soldiers to come home.
Well, there's 200,000 American troops and private contractors, with the private contractors now making up the majority. The United States has the largest embassy in the world, one that can be seen from the moon in Baghdad. So I wonder whether actually the United States is going to be gone in terms of the timetable that Barack Obama has set.
We've been hearing about timetables for coming on 7 years now, so I don't have a lot of faith in timetables. And actually, in campaigning, Obama never said he would end the occupation. He said he would leave behind a residual force to defend the embassy and, quote-unquote, defeat al-Qaeda. Now, if you have to defend your embassy with the most powerful military in the world, that might be a clue that the people of that country don't want you there. That's number one. Number two, who is al-Qaeda? We label al-Qaeda anyone who resists our occupation. Now, believe me, if a foreign army invaded the United States, if they were here, the front line of defense would be Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, and National Guard. In Iraq, it is people defending their homes, their families, their lives, their countries. And as long as we are illegally occupying them, they will resist. That's the reality. So if that's the benchmark for Obama, then we're never leaving. But eventually, the United States is going to have to leave. The British were kicked out of Iraq in the 1920s. The resistance continued for a long time, and the resistance will continue today. The Iraqis are descendants of the people who were the makers of the cradle of civilization. They are capable of defending themselves and rebuilding their own democratic society.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with me. Dalia Wasfi was born to an American Jewish mother and an Iraqi Muslim father, and she she's gone several times to Iraq. She's currently working on a book on her experiences. If you want to check the progress of it all, or just see more of her stories, you can go to liberatethis.com. Liberatethis.com. There'll be a link on my site, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. Dalia, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure. Anytime.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Join the Rift tomorrow from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Schoolcraft College in Radcliffe Center on Radcliffe Street in Garden City for the free 2010 Public Safety Career Expo. Stop by and investigate a career in law enforcement, firefighting, or EMT. Visit schoolcraftcollege.com for more info.
This is attorney D. Todd Williams. Contemplating a divorce raises many stressful questions. Should I file first? Should I move out of the house? Can I close bank accounts, buy a new car, sell property? and the list goes on. You don't need promises. You need someone to trust and provide answers. These difficult times may or may not be the time to file for divorce, but getting realistic answers and solutions is the difference between saving tens of thousands of dollars in property and attorney's fees and the difference in the time you may spend with your children. If you're facing the prospect of divorce or just contemplating your options, visit us on the web at dtoddlaw.com. Come in and talk to me and find out where you stand and what options you have. Get a clear picture of your situation so that you can make the right decision at the right time. Look us up, dtoddlaw.com. That's dtoddlaw.com. I'm D. Todd Williams, your first contact to exercise your rights in divorce.
Why is it that the larger a bank gets, the less it seems to get you? When did you become merely an account number? How come when you have questions, there's no one there to answer? Well, maybe it's time you asked around. Maybe it's time to ask Comerica, the bank that answers to you. Since 1849, we've given our customers the personalized one-on-one attention they need to make informed decisions. So, while most banks make you sit on hold, Comerica actually sits down with you. From understanding which mortgage program is best for you to getting the capital your business needs, simply ask Comerica. With over 161 years of know-how, our banking professionals can show you how. So, if you're looking for a bank that's big enough to help but small enough to care, ask Comerica. We answer to you. To find a Comerica Banking Center nearest you, visit Comerica.com or call 800-292-1300. Comerica Bank, member FDIC, an equal opportunity lender, an equal housing lender.
It all starts with having a good, pre-screened group of contractors to choose from. And Hire It Done is your one-stop guide to finding the one that's right for your home improvement project. Hi, I'm Adam Helfman, host of WRIF's Hire It Done. Before you start your day's home improvement tasks around your house, grab a cup of hot coffee and tune us in Saturday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Join us this weekend. Ready, set, remodel. We know you have projects, and Hire It Done will help you get them off the ground running. Spring is the best time to add a room addition. Don't wait until the weather's hot and the neighbors are enjoying their weekends barbecuing, and you're staying away while the contractors invade your home. Hire It Done now. Spring is the time to repair those unsightly driveway cracks and get rid of that mold and moss on your roof once and for all. And Roger the Roofer of Ram Residential sits down with us on the Contractor's Corner. Join us as we spring into home improvement. Hire It Done's money-saving tip of the week, our Green Minute, plus I'll take your house calls live. All this Saturday, beginning at 7 a.m. on Hire It Done and 101 WRIF The Riff. Hire It Done.
Mid-Michigan, if you've had credit problems and you're in need of an auto loan, Lasco Ford and Fenton has good news. You're approved. Right now, you can go to LascoFord.com and get pre-approved. And if Lasco Ford can't get you an auto loan, they'll pay you $1,000 cash. Lasco Ford has the national lenders that will give you an auto loan at an affordable payment, like a 2007 Ford Fusion for only $149 a month. Lasco Ford also has programs for customers that may have had foreclosures, loan modifications, or repossessions in the past. And this month at Lasco Ford, you can choose from zero down or deferred payments up to 6 months. If you've had credit problems or have been turned down by another dealer, call Lasco Ford today and get approved. If you're turned down, they'll pay you $1,000 cash. You can visit www.lascoford.com to get pre-approved 24 hours a day at Lasco Ford. Open until 8 p.m. weekdays, Saturdays 9 to 5, or visit lascoford.com.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. I'm looking at this week's Metro Times, this week being June 4th to the 10th, as I record this show. Headline says, experts say 10,000 people are wrongly convicted each year. It's a whole story about two guys that may have been among that number. And we find out increasingly that people that have are on death row are innocent and are exonerated. And one begins to wonder how many people on death row, let alone in the entire justice system in the United States, have been convicted wrongly, yet support among the people for the death penalty is overwhelming. With that in mind, it's the book that I'm holding seems very apropos. It's called The Culture of Vengeance and the Fate of American Justice. The author is Terry K. Alajim, and Terry Alajim is a lecturer on social studies at Harvard University and an associate director at Harvard's Derek Bach Center for Teaching and Learning. He's joining us from the Boston area. Terry Alajim, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you
for having me, Peter.
Yeah, the culture of vengeance. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, which people take it to mean, you know, that it's in their hands. An eye for an eye, though, is in that same book. Vengeance seems almost rooted in the human personality.
Oh yes, I think we're deeply wired for it in a way, and I my book really is an attempt to do honor to that and appreciate the fact that it's there, but that it's nevertheless dangerous, and it's particularly dangerous, I think, when it becomes a function of government and legal punishment.
Yeah, social policy in a way. Yeah, I mean, people always say, since I oppose the death penalty, they would say, well, what would happen if what would you do to someone who killed one of your family members? And I said, and they put me in the room with them, I'd probably, you know, want to cut their head off. But that's not exactly what a justice system is all about, is personal vengeance, although it is in some parts of the world, isn't it?
Oh, certainly it is, and I think that we are not that far off. I think it's a universal feeling. I think everyone has that kind of reaction about the prospect of a loved one being hurt or killed. But what distinguishes America, I think, is the extent to which we parade that idea before the public through the media. And that's why the culture of vengeance in my title, the idea that we've made an almost a fetish of the prospect of this happening, and that our system of justice is not equipped to handle the anger that we might feel, and that we prevail upon that system to react accordingly, in fact, to exercise our vengeance for us, hence the return of the death penalty.
Well, it's sort of a communal vengeance in a way, because of all the people that have been murdered, say, this year in Detroit and in Michigan, I haven't known any of them, although I have known parents of people that have been killed, and yet the desire for a death penalty remains in the public consciousness pretty high. I mean, what's that all about? I mean, it's not their kin, it's not their direct relative that's been harmed.
Oh, yes. I think there's a kind of empathy and a kind of feedback loop that occurs through the media, in which we all become very conscious of it. And, of course, it's all immediately in front of us now with the vivid representations that you get through the web and on television, even in the evening news. So, yes.
Well, we see, speaking of that, please, when you answer this question, maybe explain that a little more. I'm not sure what, you mean that we see the murderers and the drama of it portrayed all the time.
Oh, yes, and yeah. I don't want my favorite 13-year-old watching even the evening news at 10, because it's become so violent and so graphic, and so much about this this problem.
Yeah, I watch television so little, and this is right out of my brain. There was this man in California a couple of years ago who was accused of killing his pregnant wife. And would you remember that? The Terry somebody. This is, people are going to, everyone who's listening is going, it's filling in the blank because it was this national story.
But I didn't know the case.
Yeah, I was, my wife and I and our dog were at this park, and this couple came up to me. Came up to us and said, so-and-so has just been convicted. You know, they were like all overjoyed. And my wife said, who's so-and-so? And they laughed like they thought she was kidding. Like this had become a national, an item or a news story of national importance, that this man who tragically and brutally had killed his wife and his unborn child, and yet though that they're, that's what you're talking about, right? There's this anger all around the country at it.
Exactly, and it's not unjustified anger. It's just that my fear is that it's been orchestrated for us. We have a kind of script that's been given to us through the various media of how we're supposed to respond. There is that jubilation at the finding of guilt, and I think this is how we begin to make mistakes, that we celebrate the catching and conviction of a murderer before we know the facts. The press is all over it from the first moment, unlike other countries where the press is kept in abeyance until there's some evidence of until there's a proof of guilt. So we're doing something different, I think, than the rest of the world on this.
Terry Elodgem, as you may know, Michigan as a state has never had an execution. It's banned in our state constitution. Yet when public opinion polls are taken, Michigan residents have as high support for a death penalty as do, say, people in Texas or Virginia, some of these high execution states. Any thoughts about that, or is that just part of what you call in the first part of the title of your book, the culture of vengeance that even comes into a state that doesn't have a death penalty?
Oh, yes, indeed. I think that's exactly what I'm talking about, that there's a enormous frustration out there with the system of justice, and that goes for the states in which there's a death penalty and the states in which there's not. Your listeners probably know this is it's a mantra of the Republican Party and the conservative right that we need to catch the bad guys and fry them, basically. So, yes, it's something that affects people in every state, and nationwide the support for the death penalty hovers at around 58% or 60%.
Now, it's one of the items on the agenda of people that support a death penalty always was that it was a deterrent. And after so many years, and it's been shown that it isn't, and such a small number of people who commit capital crimes are actually executed, now the new argument is that it's appropriate punishment. You've taken a life, and it's back to that eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. You've taken a life, you give a life. And that seems to ring with some appropriateness.
Oh, yes, indeed, and it is something that the churches tend to confirm across the country, and I think there's a tremendous need for a simple, clear, unambiguous sort of equivalent justice. The trouble is our system can't provide it, and part of what I write about is the extent to which our system is anything but infallible and makes mistakes. We have crime labs abusing DNA evidence. We have people in crime labs distorting the results of their experiments to create a particular conclusion, basically lying. So even if you have a sort of clear idea of retributive morality, an eye for an eye, the system of justice is not equipped to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, we have juries that have to hear cases, and they're presented with all sorts of evidence and all sorts of efforts to sway them one way or another. So the result is never exact.
Terry Elodgem, in your book, The Culture of Vengeance and the Fate of American Justice, you cite on numerous occasions the late French philosopher Michel Foucault in his book, Discipline and Punish. It opens with a scene of the man convicted of regicide against one of the kings of England that is so disturbing in what is done to him. He was tortured and finally drawn and quartered. And that's the good part of it. I mean, details are so horrific that I wish I had to be honest. I wish I'd never read it. It sticks in my mind. And there were great crowds would come out. Great crowds would come out for public executions, even in the United States, up till I think the late 1930s, where there was sometimes like 20,000 people at a time would come to watch these. I think there was one. Was it in Louisville, Kentucky, or someplace like that?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And what? And the same thing with lynchings, for instance. Crowds would come to see that twisted communal justice. I shouldn't say twisted communal punishment. Let's not put the word justice in there. What's the impulse there? I mean, it would seem to me that if I knew an execution was going on in downtown Detroit, I would head out to the suburbs, go the opposite direction, in other words.
Yes. Well, I think that there is that there are quite a lot of people who do take satisfaction in the idea that there is some equivalent justice and that it's being meted out in those punishments. So there are people who go there and they think it's the morally right thing to do. Even the punishments in Foucault's time drew crowds who felt they were morally right to be there and that this was a display of proper justice. I'm sure that's part of the sentiment in which people tried to view the execution of Timothy McVeigh not long ago in the United States. That's also would have drawn crowds had it been allowed on a more broad basis. There was a whole debate around that, if you remember. There is that impulse, but I think there's also a different kind of interest at stake, and I think that's the wish to see blood, sometimes for its own sake, the fascination with violence itself here in a legally sanctioned environment gets to be realized, but also the idea of seeing blood with a kind of moral vindication around it is part of that impulse, and I really do think that's about vengeance.
Well, today, in the main, I'm trying to think of any exceptions, you're essentially just euthanizing people when they're put to death for capital crimes, and much like we talk about putting our beloved animals to sleep, it's certainly not the torturous and barbaric treatment that was meted out, say, in 18th century or 17th century England, or even the electric chair. The other people used to say, you know, got to fry them, and they were delighted about 10,000 volts going through someone's body, or the grotesque specter of a hanging and a neck breaking, and some. Well, I won't even go into the gories of what could happen. So now, I mean, I wonder if that even meets the culture of vengeance that you talk about. McVeigh, he apparently, from what I read, he looked defiantly at the people viewing his execution, and then, of course, just closed his eyes and drifted off to sleep.
Yes, you're right, and this happens all the time, and many an execution is like that, or people have found God in the final moments of their stay on death row, that kind of thing. And so it does seem to be more muted. And in fact, I talk a lot about the ways in which this has become subtle. We're not Americans are not rushing out committing acts of vengeance every day. They're rather sitting at home and watching it and rooting for one side or another in a crime show or having the kind of experience you're talking about around an execution. If it's lethal injection, for example, it does appear to be quiet. The person drifts off to sleep. But still, I think they're watching with the same kind of wish that it would be more, or with an appreciation that this is still the death of the bad guy and that he's gotten his just desserts.
You use the phrase bad guy, and it's odd that that's crept into our common parlance, because, of course, it was something from when we were kids, and it was from cowboy movies. But now, regularly, anybody that the United States is fighting is called the bad guys. And George W. Bush talks about evildoers and axis of evil. And although all countries act in a self-righteous manner, whatever social policies or foreign policy they carry out, it seems that there's a recent elevation of the idea of ethical, you know, no matter, even though there's debate about it, about the ethical ethics leading the way, that we're, you know, with it, there's a great morality here, the good guys against the bad guys, domestically and foreign.
Yes, isn't that interesting? We're supposed to have a division between church and state, and in fact, we have politicians on at every level talking about evil and the need to put down evil. George Bush taking every opportunity to tell us that terrorists are evil people, for example. You're absolutely right, and that's part of what I discuss. I think we have created a whole kind of secular vocabulary of evil. We even have sociopathic killers who are the worst kind of evil characters. And again, it's become a kind of a script, but it's a script that allows us to tell an almost religious story in secular political terms and allows the religious impulse for a clear and unambiguous morality to be politicized. And I think that's where I think we get into trouble in a democracy.
You're listening to The Peter Werby Show. My guest is Terry Alhajem. He's written The Culture of Vengeance and the Fate of American Justice. It's published by Cambridge University Press. You can go to cambridge.org, and you'll be able to find the book pretty easily. There'll also be a link on my website, Peter Werby, werbe.com. So much of our language determines how we view things. We're in a war against terrorism. We have a war on drugs. There was a war on this. And this is in many ways the language of this society is highly militarized, and militarization, of course, implies violence.
Oh, yes. And it's not just retaliation. Again, it has this kind of vengeful quality, I think. Yeah, we have, and you notice that our heroes, too, are cast act in this way. They do battle against cancer. That makes you a hero in America, and it's a respectable thing to do. But at the same time, it is odd that we use the language of war. What it implies to me, and what I think is a bit frightening about it, is that in war you suspend law, in war you suspend rights, and you go up against your enemy, no holds barred, and there are always casualties in war. So, for example, when we launch a war on drugs, we are deciding that we are not going to concern ourselves with the same rights as people that we have in the past, and that's been part of the story with that.
Well, the iconography of war and all of its language, and it'd be interesting, or maybe you know, I'll find out when it was dated from. Many ways, I mean, there's always a celebration of military victories and the prowess of a nation's armed forces, and yet it was almost like World War II. I mean, and the impact that it had in every respect on our culture, that gave the idea of great battles. So the idea of a battle against cancer means that it's all stops out, and as well with a war, a war on drugs or a war against AIDS. So I guess I'm suggesting that maybe it's even has an appropriateness.
Oh, yes, it can, and I don't mean to say that there's something wrong with the use of the term, just that I think it also begins to articulate a safe place from which we lash out at our enemies, and that may involve this kind of quality of vengefulness, and that's when it gets out of control and becomes dangerous. Of course, we want to have a war on diseases and so forth, but the presumption that we're safe and healthy at home and everybody else and everything else is our enemy is, I think, where we begin to get into a us and them attitude, which is more vengeful, even when the enemy is something we can't harder to define, like disease.
In the first part of your title of your book, The Culture of Vengeance, it has the implication, of course, it was just essentially a mean-spirited people that want to take their revenge on people that have hurt them or the society members. Yet it would seem to me that what's at work here is a great amount of fear that, in fact, even to the level of terror, given not only what we experienced post 9/11 in the Iraq War, but fear of crime and fear of a lack of complete safety in our neighborhoods and just an anger at the people that have made the world made a world in which we're anxious about living.
Yes, I think that's right. I talk about the rage and grief, particularly, and how we hook it up with the experience of losing a loved one to murder, for example, in a common story in this culture. I don't think that Americans are all across the board vengeful people. I think we're sold a story that's an appropriate way to respond to the world, and that a lot of people buy that story. As I said before, it's a script that's been written by the political right, but has gotten traction elsewhere.
Well, I guess I was getting at as well is that the anxiety about our security, our collective security as a nation, our individual security in our neighborhoods, the safety of our family members, is not without basis. Of course, it's as you said earlier, seeing this leading. What's the old phrase in TV? If it bleeds, it leads. I every once in a while I watch the local news, and I'm thinking, well, what is this? Is this just going to be a whole news program about African Americans killing African Americans, and then all of a sudden they go, oh, then we got to show the suburban murderers too. And then they have, whites killing. And I'm thinking, man, none of this is news. But if I was sitting here in my home, if I was in the city or if I was in the suburbs, I'd be a little anxious about the world I live in.
Oh, and understandably so, yes, and 9/11 happened. I mean, we have between the experience of 9/11 and the proximity of crime in people's lives and the presentation of it in the media that you're talking about, yes, we're much more aware of it, and it's quite sensible to feel fear about it. I think then the question is what you do about it.
Yes.
And if you react from fear against enemies blindly, then you're in the territory of vengeance, and I think you start making mistakes, and that becomes dangerous for a democracy. I think that if you react strategically and intelligently to those kind of threats and those dangers, you begin to create better policies.
Well, let's talk. We just have a few minutes left. The second half of the title of your book, The Culture of Vengeance and the Fate of American Justice. None of the European countries, I think, any longer have the death penalty, and one usually doesn't even get life imprisonment if you take a life. What's the difference? What's happened in Europe, who once carried out beastly tortures that didn't have anything in constitutions against cruel and unusual punishments as we do here? They must need closure. They must need they want vengeance when a life is taken. What's happened there that differently than here?
That's a very good question. Many countries in Europe, you're absolutely right that they've gotten rid of the death penalty, and that leaves us in the company of places like Iran, Iraq, and North Korea. The countries of Europe, I think, have a few different things going on, and it's a lot of complicated stories cobbled together. But among other things, they have newer democracies which have had to think in different ways about how the democratic system in their in each country will overlay a culture of relatively more uniform values and what I would call maybe a moral culture. So you have a kind of established moral culture and a legal system that's trying to cope with that, and more recent ways of kind of discussing how those pieces are going to fit together, and a much deeper kind of reflection about whether the death penalty is an appropriate thing in that context. And of course, they have the experience of the war, the Second World War, to think back on, and to remind them that violence begets violence.
Well, we have a situation, as I said right at the beginning of the show, as we go towards our end, that there's perhaps 10,000 people a year wrongly convicted. That's 100,000 people every decade, and as it is, we have the largest prison population in the world. What the fate of American justice? I mean, that's a tall order to address in just 2 minutes. But what would you suggest concrete steps in an immediate way, or is this just more looking at a cultural mindset?
No, I think there are some concrete steps to be taken. I think we have, you're absolutely right, we have now more than 2.3 million people incarcerated in America, more than anyone else in the world or anyone in history. And you have to look at that and say, where are we going? We've gotten to that number very quickly. The growth in the population there in prison and on death row is astronomical since the 80s. So if we're going in that direction, we need to think carefully about it. We need to be asking questions like, is this effective? It does not appear to be deterring crime. It appears to be more driven by harsh and irrevocable sorts of sentencing policies, like the three strikes laws, which don't allow someone an appeal after a third offense. And these things are filling up our prisons. So do we keep on doing that? And I think the answer is no. I think we have to rethink criminal justice. We have to observe rights. We have to think about what happens to people after they get out of prison. We have to focus again on rehabilitation and on reintegration programs that put people back on the streets when they come out of prison in a different state of mind than when they went in, instead of made angry and more violent. So I think we have to do a lot of things differently, and I don't think the death penalty is helping at all. It's certainly not it's not deterring any murderers if you look at where and how it's applied.
30 seconds. This is a pretty tough one. I could imagine a listener thinking, he's soft on crime. He's soft on criminals. So what hasn't changed? You're talking about social policy, that political decisions, yet we still have, as you say in the title of your book, the culture of vengeance. How does that get worked at? We need a quick answer, unfortunately.
Okay.
For
well,
a very
I
long...
That, I know someone might think that I was soft on crime, but I think actually this is not soft on crime, because ultimately I'm saying that the more vengeful policies are make mistakes. They get select the wrong people. They result in the sort of error that you're talking about with 10,000 people being exonerated. They're bad policies, and they don't accomplish their goals. So if we stop doing that and think more strategically about how to stop crime, then I think we're in much better territory, and we're going to have much more effective policies.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. My guest has been Terry K. Aladjem. His last name is spelled A-L-A-D-J-E-M. The book, The Culture of Vengeance and the Fate of American Justice, is published by the Cambridge University Press. You can go to cambridge.org, and you can also go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, and there'll be a link for the book as well. Terry Aladjem, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you, Peter. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Know someone who always seems well-connected? Here's your chance to one-up that person and then some. Welcome to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online connection to half-off or more deals from tons of Metro Detroit businesses. Simply log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com for special online coupons and discounts you can't get anywhere else.
This week, the Spring into Savings sale includes unbelievable deals from Mill Street Grill in Pontiac, Dicko Dow's in Birmingham, Timbuktu Internet Cafe in Auburn Hills, Madison Park Bowl in Madison Heights, and Red Pepper Deli in Northville.
All you have to do is visit MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. You'll save time and money by shopping from the comfort of your computer. Heck, you don't even have to get dressed. No shirt, no shoes, no problem.
Shop naked, man. Yeah!
Dressed or not, just go to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, and you'll be connected to these incredible deals and more. MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, man. Hey, like, this chair is really cool.
MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. Graphic design is everywhere. You're exposed to it every day, every hour. It's part of everything you use. Specs Howard School of Media Arts is now teaching graphic design in a one-year program. So, if you want to do that, Specs Howard can show you how.
Dude, that billboard's sick. How could you not notice it? I want to do that.
The coffee's really good, but the graphics on the cup, man, that's genius. I want to do that.
Wow, this website just blows me away. Whoever created this is really good. I want to do that.
It's all about the graphics. That's what grabs you. Think of all the flyers, coupons, brochures, signs, food labels, and websites you see every day. Someone designed all that stuff. Someone like you. So if you want to do that, get started with the graphic design program at Specs Howard School of Media Arts. You spend 2 days a week on the main campus. The rest of the time can be spent anywhere that offers a high-speed internet connection. Specs even gives you a totally loaded MacBook to use for the length of the program. Find out more at 866-61-SPECS or check out SpecsHoward.edu. Make your life anything but ordinary.
Are you that one in a million salesperson that always gets client meetings that no one else can ever seem to get?
Do you get in front of real decision makers no matter what it takes?
Are they impressed with you?
Can you close a deal without hesitation?
We are Greater Media, a privately owned company that owns this radio station and many others. We're looking for those special people who can develop the right relationships with the right customers and bring them great ideas. Working for us, you can turn your ability to get great ideas in front of real decision makers into closing deals and making high commission fast. Just go to iclosedeals.net. That's iclosedeals.net. Tell us a bit about yourself. That's iclosedeals.net, and we'll talk soon.
Join 101 WRIF for the ultimate Red Wing viewing parties at the Hamlin Pubs and register to win the ultimate Red Wing playoff package, including two tickets to all first-round home games with limo transportation. But wait, there's more. You'll also get a party for you and 20 friends at Hamlin Pub for all round one away games. The Rip will be giving away tons of prizes every week, like cool Red Wings fatheads, free passes to cart to cart, and even Red Wings neon and framed pictures from LeBaron's Billiards and Game Room Supply. Enjoy 275, 23-ounce, and $2.16 Miller Lite drafts. And be sure to try Hamlin's famous Primo's of Birmingham pizza. It's awesome. Join WRAF this Wednesday night from 7 to 9 p.m. for the ultimate Red Wing viewing party at the Chesterfield Hamlin Pub on Gratiot Avenue, where everyone's a regular. Visit online at hamlinpubs.com. Transportation provided by Bozo Limousines.
Instead of going to some small smoky hole in the wall for dollar beers, why not go somewhere where they understand how hard it is for all of us right now, where you don't have to blow out your wallet to have a good time? Overtime Grill and Taproom in Waterford has 17,000 square feet of action, starting with 4,000 square feet of gaming for you and your friends. With bowling, hoops, arcade, video games, you can catch all the sports action on the big screens and enjoy some of the area's best food. Overtime is ready to help you unwind with $3 bombs, $3 shots, and all your favorite draft beer specials Friday and Saturday nights. And Power Hours back Thursday nights with $1 beers, $2 well drinks, and half off all wine.
Monday through Thursday, it's Overtime's world-famous triple plate dinner for two. Appetizer, two dinner entrees, and dessert for only $19.99. That's right, just $19.99. Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, get a pitcher and a pizza for $10. Power Hour, Monday through Thursday nights with dollar drafts and $2 wells from 10:30 till 11:30.
The Overtime Grill and Tap Room in Waterford. Check out overtymegrillandtap.com.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Digital.